direction and take action if we needed to.
Yeah.
And I'm totally simplified it because I don't totally understand the whole thing. That's the gist.
I only sent them 51 questions.
They hate me today. Oh my God, Lori.
Just as an aside, in that same general area, we did get approval from Mr. Girard to file the application for water for this summer, renewing it for the property. And it was very receptive to that. So we'll see. Hopefully, we'll get that approved.
So, Bruce, do you think that's year two then? Would that be year three?
Three.
Three? I hope so.
Yeah.
No, that's
all
we need.
Right at the end.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
we'll talk more about that. Yeah.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's
everything feels like it's just scratching. Yeah. Janet Caldwell, Kurt Meyer, Hugh Cartwright,
yeah,
and Jeremy Hall. And there's one more that didn't.
Do we need to
somebody's hanging off the
screen. Do we need to line out the procedures? Because I think based on the number of comments that I've received written, I assume we have a number of people that want to talk. And last time we had the gentleman indicate if he had somebody on the phone.
Desi's in the back again.
Okay.
He's in that room. So he'll
queue up the call.
Okay, great.
He just keep asking, is there another caller?
And then we printed out all the public comment and gave it to the recorder so it's in the record.
Cool.
Too. So
great.
We got a lot.
Are we going to limit the time that people have?
Yes. And ask them that we try to not. I mean, it's fine to agree with somebody, but we don't want to hear, you know, we just really have to kind of focus on the individual points, and reiterating is fine, but the detailed reiteration probably is beyond the scope of, you know, running the meeting officially.
And, yeah, and I think we can let them know, too, that we do have their written comments. They are into the record, so they don't have to repeat or read their letter.
I don't know which clock we're on. 5:29 is what it says.
Oh, oh, no, never mind.
Okay.
Okay. No, we don't have a
meeting.
Oh, never mind, just in the wrong spot. We get kind of accustomed.
Good evening. I'm Bruce Scott, Chairman of the Open Space Advisory Committee. Leanne Kieber is on my right, Chairman of the Parks and Recreation Commission. We have other members of the committee and commission here tonight. Welcome you to the joint meeting of Parks and Recreation and Open Space, which we try to have two a year. So with that, I would ask for a roll call.
For the Open Space Advisory Committee, Chairperson Scott.
Here.
Vice Chair Welch.
Present.
Member Evans.
Is she here?
Okay. Member Hall. Member Inverson.
Here.
Member Massad.
He's on mute.
Okay.
Desi needs to unmute. Okay.
Member Michael. Quorum is present. And then for Parks and Recreation Commission, Chairperson Kieber.
Here.
Vice Chair Cartwright. Well, actually, she's four. Yeah, I just realized that. I just had it written down. So,
she's here.
Okay, perfect. Vice Chair Meyer, Commissioner Bagwell,
here.
Commissioner Whitefield, Commissioner Caldwell, Commissioner Wilkes McCulloch, a quorum is present.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Leanne and I will kind of alternate on some of these topics tonight, so I'll start off, but we'll give it to her in just a minute. First, the first thing we have on the agenda is public comment. This relates to items which are not on the agenda, and we will have public comment associated with each agenda item. So if you have something to say on an agenda item, please hold it until that time. We will hear everyone's comments. I will ask people to keep them brief and to listen to other comments on the same topic so that we don't repeat ourselves. It's fine to support what other people are saying, but we want to keep the public comment as efficient as we can so that everyone gets a chance to provide their input. With that, are there any public comments on any items which are not a part of the agenda, or either open space or parks and recreation?
We have a few callers, Mr. Chair.
Okay, please go forward, and with the comments, please introduce yourself, since we can't see you and can only hear you, and proceed if you would. Thank you.
Caller, if you can hear us, it is your turn for public comment. Please state your name for the record. Caller, it is your turn for public comment. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Scott Kula. I understand that there is public comment on an agenda item, so I was waiting for that.
Okay, thank you. Next caller, it is your turn for public comment. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ernie Walsh. I want to comment on agenda item 3A.
Okay, thank you. Next caller, it is your turn for public comment. Please state your name for the record.
My turn. This is Margie Evans. Am I supposed to be on the committee? But I didn't get a link to join.
Okay, Margie, I'll make sure that I keep you unmuted throughout.
Okay. Send me the link.
Yes, we will work on sending you the link.
Okay.
Last caller, it is your turn for public comment. Please state your name for the record.
It's Charles Clemenson, and I am commenting on agenda item 3A, the flat project.
Thank you. That is all public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and thank you to members of the public out there. We'll certainly give you a chance to speak on the agenda items that you referenced. Item number one, possible action on approval of the minutes. This is now Parks and Recreation Commission meeting of February 4th, 2020. Leanne, did you have anything to initiate that?
I was just going to ask if all the commission members have read the minutes, and if they have any corrections or comments they'd like to make, I'd like to hear them now. I'm ready for a motion. I move to approve the minutes of February 4th, 2020, as presented. Okay. Any discussions? Is there a second? Can I second? I'll second then. All right, we have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Are they unmuted? Desi, are they unmuted on the WebEx?
Aye.
Commissioners and board members, you'll need to unmute your microphones when you're making comment.
All those in favor of approving the minutes from our February 4th, 2020 meeting, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Sounds as though the motion carries. Is there anybody voting no on it? All right, hearing no goes, the motion passes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next item two, modifications to the agenda. Any modifications?
Thank you so much.
No modifications. Thank you.
Is that anything from you, Lynn? Okay. Meeting items. Item 3A, discussion only. Review and discussion regarding the updated 70% conceptual design plans for the proposed waterfall trailhead parking area, also known as the Kings Canyon Trailhead Parking Lot. Greg and Dirk, are you presenting?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Greg Bergeron, field coordinator with Carson City Parks Recreation and Open Space, and I'll start off with the timeline of the Kings Canyon Flat Grant. So in 2017, Carson City submitted a grant application for a Federal Land Access Program grant, or FLAP grant, with support from the Regional Transportation Commission, the Open Space Advisory Committee, and the Parks and Rec Commission. In July of 2018, the RTC, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Federal Highway Administration signed a memorandum of agreement to move forward with the project to make improvements to the Kings Canyon Road. A portion of the project includes construction of a new Kings Canyon trailhead, and an excerpt from that agreement reads, "The parking area will be expanded for approximately 30 car parking stalls, paved, one ADA parking pad, two trailer parking stalls, gravel, and a vault toilet. The final parking lot design and capacity will be determined during preliminary design." In August of 2018, the Open Space Advisory Committee, or OSAC, approved 5-0 the use of approximately $35,000 from the Quality of Life Fund to serve as a portion of the required 5% local match to a flat grant of approximately $3.7 million for trailhead and roadway improvements in Kings Canyon. In September of 2018, a letter was sent to property owners who accessed their property from within the project area to introduce the project, notify them that a public meeting would be held in early 2019, and to provide staff contacts. In October of 2018, Public Works and the Parks and Rec Parks Recreation Open Space Department met with property owners adjacent to the trailhead. In April of 2019, a 30% design plans were received from Central Federal Lands, and a second letter was sent to nearby property owners inviting them to meet with staff and to inform them where the plans could be viewed, which was online and at the library and at Public Works. In October and November of 2019, RTC, OSAC, and PRC provided comments on the design of the trailhead. In January of 2020, 70% designs were received for Central Federal Lands, but due to staff concerns, we requested revised 70% plans. And in February of 2020, a fourth letter was sent to nearby property owners regarding stakes being placed along the project area. On May 22nd, 2020, letters were sent to nearby property owners to inform them that we received 70% plans from Central Federal Lands, and informing them of where the plans could be viewed and to provide staff contacts. Throughout the last year, staff has met with several property owners, and most recently in the last couple of weeks. On June 10th, 2020, the RTC reviewed and commented on the 70% plans, and then tonight, the Open Space Advisory Committee and the Parks and Rec Commission will review and comment on the 70% plans with a focus on the trailhead parking area. A little bit of background and history. Flat grants are highly competitive, and a key element is that the project provides improved public access to federal lands. Access to public lands along the Eastern Sierra Front has been an issue in several communities. From Carson City, public access is essentially from three locations, or public access to U.S. Forest Service or federal lands in the Carson Range essentially has three locations for access, and that is the Lakeview Trailhead, Ash Canyon, and Kings Canyon. The Kings Canyon Road was constructed in the 1860s and later became part of the Lincoln Highway. Today, Kings Canyon Road provides access to a number of homes and also provides public access to lands that are administered by both the U.S. Forest Service and Carson City. There are several trails nearby, including the Waterfall Trail, the North Kings Loop, the Upper Waterfall Loop, Ash to Kings Trail, and the dirt portion of Kings Canyon Road. And planned trails include connecting the Ash to Kings Trail to Douglas County, and a Lincoln Bypass Trail, which it's called Bypass because it essentially bypasses the old Lincoln Highway. And I bring that up because ultimately that will probably reduce some of the mountain bike traffic on the Kings Canyon Road. So what does the project include? Reconstruction of about 1 mile of roadway, safety improvements to the road, significant improvements to roadside drainage, and improvements to the trailhead. And I plan to discuss the trailhead in detail, but first I'd like to let either Chris McKinnovich or Dirk Goering briefly just talk about the road project. The road portion of the project is relevant because it's what will provide access to the trailhead.
Good evening, my name is Chris Martinovich, Transportation Traffic Engineer for Carson City Public Works. Wanted to just kind of give a little bit of a high-level discussion of the road and the road improvements as part of this project. So as Greg mentioned, there's about a mile of roadway to be reconstructed as part of this from the current parking area of the waterfall trail down to the lower creek crossing. The current design in the 70% plans basically provides for a 30-foot roadway section, which includes 28 feet of paving, plus two additional gravel, 1 foot wide gravel shoulders on the edge of the road. The roadway section includes the two 11-foot travel lanes, one uphill, one downhill, a 4 foot wide bike lane shoulder area on the uphill direction, and a 2 foot wide shoulder area in the downhill direction. And so kind of the reasoning for the travel lane and the bike lanes kind of keeping the bike lanes right in the uphill direction, we know the existing gradient of the road is approximately 9% plus or minus. So in accordance with some national design standards for bicycle facilities, we're providing the room for bicycles in the uphill direction and not in the downhill direction, because the general assumption is because of the gradient of the road, bicycles would be traveling faster, would have an easier time merging in the vehicles, whereas the opposite direction would be moving slower, and so we're providing a little bit of an additional space for those people to climb the road and have that leeway to do that at a slower speed. I wanted to mention a couple of other things. First of all, I wanted to mention that the structural section of the roadway, we are reconstructing the roadway fully. We're not just overlaying, we're not just putting up a skim coat or a slurry. Full depth reconstruction with 4 inches of new asphalt paving on 6 inches of aggregate base. We're also reconstructing all of the driveway approaches along the road. So if you have a concrete driveway approach, you're going to get a new concrete approach. If you're getting an asphalt approach, you'll be getting a new asphalt approach. If you have a gravel approach, be providing a new asphalt approach as well. So all the approaches in the roadway will be upgraded. We're also providing new storm drain improvements as part of the project, which include new roadside ditches, as well as new culverts at each driveway crossing. Wanted to mention back on the roadway real quick, we have had some discussions. The designer of this project, Greg, if you mentioned this, I missed that, but the designer of this project is Federal Highway Central Federal Lands. So it's being done by the Federal Highway Administration. And we've had some discussions with them about some different opinions on different options for roadway and the roadway width. So we've heard a lot of comments from the community up in the canyon that if the road's too wide as proposed is 70% design. So in consultation with Central Federal Lands, we have an option to reduce the width of the travel lanes from 11 feet, potentially down to 10 feet. That would reduce the overall pavement width from the 28 feet of paving down to the 26 feet of paving. So that is a potential option we've been considering with Central Federal Lands. We've also been considering some other improvements up near the trailhead, which include ways to limit parking. I think Greg's going to touch on the trailhead in a moment, but some of the design features we're considering are placing maybe curb and gutter along the edge of the road, or maybe railing or fencing, or doing some different adjustments with the slope to kind of prevent and limit some parking in that area. I want to mention real quick also that the speed limit of the road right now, Kings Canyon is posted at 35 miles per hour. We are proposing to reduce the speed limit to 30 miles an hour, so that would be the perfect speed. That would be accomplished through not only the posting, but also with signing and striping modifications. We're working with Central Federal Lands to evaluate different signing and striping options, and we'll continue to progress those options as the design progresses and moves forward. One of the things I want to mention as well, signing striping. Striping in particular, we will be putting edge striping and center line striping on the roadway. We're also going to put guideposts, which are those vertical white or kind of metal posts you see along some of the roads. I think there's only about 2 or 3 up there currently. So by adding guideposts, we'll kind of define the edge of the pavement and provides kind of a visual visual line to kind of view the road and hopefully kind of keep people from deviating from the paved surface. Regarding storm drainage, Rafa is here if there are specific questions regarding storm drainage, but we are improving the storm drainage, as I mentioned. The two creek crossings, the upper creek crossing will be improved by enlarging the existing 30-inch corrugated metal pipe. So we'll be upsizing that to a 4-foot by 6-foot reinforced box culvert designed to meet the storm events anticipated in the canyon and prevent the water from backing up, overtopping the road, and either flowing into adjacent properties or washing out the new roadside ditches. On Lower Creek Crossing, we are providing some upgrades to that facility, construction of a new head wall, but most of that existing infrastructure will generally remain in that location. I think that's the bulk of what I wanted to mention. I want to go back to the bike lane real quick. We were also coordinating with Central Federlands regarding the signing and striping, if we want to sign it and stripe it as a bike lane. Because the roadway to the east that's not a part of this project between Longview and the Lower Creek Crossing doesn't have currently width for a bike lane. We're considering that, you know, maybe that's a place where we don't sign and stripe it today, but as the future project comes together, that may be an option where we could add at a later date depending on when timing of projects come. So that's something we're also discussing with Central Federlands, and would certainly enjoy input from this group on any of those topics. So that's all I have for now. I'll turn it back to Greg. Happy to answer your questions later on. Thanks.
Thank you. So so the trailhead portion of the project, if you look at this map, this shows an aerial view of the existing configuration, and then it's overlaid by the proposal. And so where my cursor is right up in here is the existing cut into the bank, where there's parking for approximately 6 to 8 vehicles. People wind up parking along the sides of the road and up higher on Kings Canyon Road. Sometimes they wind up, we've heard concerns about people blocking driveways to the home up at the very top and to the home right down here. Recently, we've had, commonly we have 20 plus vehicles at a given time during the day up here. Recently, with COVID concerns and people looking for things to do, we've had 50 plus vehicles several times. So I think everyone can agree that what's there now is problematic. It causes congestion. It causes a lot of frustration on behalf of the homeowners that live there. And I think that through design, we can create something that is better to manage. And so I want to bring up this next slide, which shows the design. And so with the new design, the parking lot will be separate from Kings Canyon Road. So Kings Canyon Road will be dropped a little bit lower right here, and the parking lot will be separated from Kings Canyon Road. The driveway into the upper residence, which was right here, will be relocated. And I don't know that this is going to be the final location, but it will be relocated away from the project. The other thing that we've done is this is the existing trailhead to the waterfall trail. We've moved that south to get farther away from the residence. We've moved the restroom, the kiosk signage, and the ADA parking. Everything, we've concentrated it farther away from the residences so that we're trying to move the congestion away from the homes. And a few things that will be included in this project. So we have space for 30 vehicles, we are including 2 ADA spaces. We'll have a modern ADA compliant vault toilet. ZXT toilets, I might mention, are vandal resistant and there's no odor. Trailhead and informational interpretive signage, bear resistant trash receptacle will all be up here. And this project or the parking lot will be gated at both ends, so we'll be able to control the activity at night. And the other thing is that the current parking lot is on U.S. Forest Service property, which the new parking lot will be as well, but we're going to enter into a management agreement with the Forest Service, so Carson City will be able to assume management for the project, or for the parking lot. We're looking, as Chris Martinovich mentioned, we're looking at ways to prevent parking on Kings Canyon Road. We're hoping that having a designated managed parking area will encourage people just to use that and not to park, to seek parking elsewhere. One of the topics that has been brought up among residents is the concern about fire. And with this design, we've got turnaround for fire trucks. We also have potential staging area for emergency vehicles. I also wanted to mention that at the RTC meeting, one of the members brought up a suggestion of making this a one-way, which we discussed that in staff, and we see a lot of positives to that and not really a lot of negatives. Having a one-way through here would reduce the footprint of the project. We could narrow the amount of asphalt that we're using. It would reduce a little bit the amount of excavation. And we would also, if we had a one-way, we would do angled parking, which would wind up reducing a few of the parking spaces. We would go from 30 down to some slightly smaller number, which I know that the number of parking spaces has been a concern. And with that, I'd like to turn it over for comment.
Thank you, Greg. Any more staff presentation before we go to committee commission comments? Okay. Leanne, why don't you go through your Parks and Rec folks and see what comments they have, and then we'll go to open space.
All right, Parks and Rec people, do we have any comments on this? Anybody from Parks and Rec?
Commissioner Cartwright, I do have two questions. I put them in the chat box. Is it okay if I ask them now?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. The first question I have is about the road width. There was mentioned that it could possibly be reduced from 28 feet to 26 feet, and I did read in some of the public comments that the widening of the road was that concern. Does reducing it from 28 feet to 26 feet address the concerns of the residents there?
Anybody want to answer that for the commissioner, please?
Sure, Chris Martinovich again, for the record. The width of the road, we have heard a number of comments regarding the width and the desire to narrow it. The existing road is approximately 24 feet plus or minus. It gets a little bit narrower at the top. The width of the road, I should mention, as currently designed in the 70% plans, is narrower than Carson City's standard width for a collective facility. The 28 feet still remains in accordance with nationally accepted design standards, as does the 26 feet. So that's about as minimum as we can go. 26 feet of paving, that would be 10 11-foot lanes, or two 10-foot lanes, one 4-foot bike shoulder, and then one 2-foot wide shoulder. So that's how we get to the 26. That's about as small as we can go within our nationally accepted design standards.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think my next question is for you as well on road design. Is that okay if I ask my second question?
Absolutely.
I'm going to go with yes for the signs. I just was wondering if there will be a sign for that driveway, the turnoff that's first before the trailhead. I can just be, even if you have your Google Maps up or something, taking that first turn and ending up in their driveway instead of at the trailhead. So is there a sign that we can add that says, private driveway over here?
I think we can work with Central Federal Lands to determine, first of all, where the final location of the driveway is going to be. And if the sign is appropriate at that location, we can certainly review adding that.
Commissioner Begbaugh? I'll just comment just so that the committee is aware that during the RTC discussion, the RTC, the traffic type of group, did not support lowering the rating to 26 feet. They wanted to stay with the 28. I just thought it was important to let you know that. Thank you so much for that. Any other comments or questions from the commission? Just a question.
This is Kurt Meyer.
Okay. Kurt, go ahead.
If Lori wants to go first, that's fine.
Are you two going to duke it out?
Okay, I'm on. first question is, I just wanted to say thanks for bringing this to the public and letting the public voice their concerns on this. I got up there and ride my mountain bike up there quite a bit, and since this COVID thing has happened, it's been very, very busy up there, and the public is really concerned about it that live in that canyon, and I appreciate these open forums to let them air their concerns because they are impacted more than anybody. First question I had was, did you say the trash and the maintenance of the bathrooms would be done by the U.S. Forest Service?
When we enter the management agreement with the Forest Service, the city will assume management for the entire parking lot. So we'll do the trash, the bathrooms, we'll lock the gates at night or close in the night. We'll have some means of controlling the use at night.
Thank you for that, Greg. Will that be on year-round basis?
Year-round? Is that year-round?
Yes, year-round.
That's very important. And an overall question, and when we get to these plans and we're listening to all these public meetings, we have it with the RTC, we also have it with Park and Rec and also Open Space. Before this moves forward and the whole package goes to the Board of Supervisors for approval, who has the final recommendation to the Board of Supervisors before that happens?
Thanks, Kurt. Jennifer Budish, Parks and Recreation Director. I just want to clarify that this will not go back to the Board of Supervisors. We already have all of the required approval from that board, which related to the grant application and authorization of the match. This is something that will be bid out by Central Federal Lands, and they'll award their bid, and they'll manage the construction, and it's primarily on Forest Service land, with exception of the roadway improvements. So it will not go back to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, so I guess I didn't phrase my question well enough. There's a lot of concern from the public on what's going on in the canyon, not only the road, but the parking lot. And are we just going to keep hashing that out until everybody's happy? Or who has the final say on the 100% plan and going forward with that 100% plan?
I don't know if I can specifically answer that question. I can provide a little bit more of a schedule for the project itself. So the general concept here moving forward is we're going to gather the comments that we've heard from the RTC last week, this commission, joint commission this week, and as well as our own internal staff review of the plans. We're continuing to have a dialogue and plan to continue to have a dialogue with the residents in the canyon. That will continue for the project. Ultimately, at 70%, you know, we're going to be compiling all these comments and providing them back to Central Federal Lands based on kind of the recommendations. They'll revise the plans. The general timeline of that is try to compile comments by the end of this month, early July timeframe. They'll compile their comments, make the revisions, and then submit back a 90 or 95% plan set. Again, we'll follow the same kind of presentation. The RTC and to this board commission, and that's probably in the late summer fall time frame, looking back at dirt there. So that's the general next time the plans will be submitted. Ultimately, the schedule has the plans being bid out by Central Federal Lands near the end of the year and awarded to a contractor by the end of the year, right at the end of December, such that construction can begin in the late spring, summer of 2021.
Okay, thank you very much for that explanation. That's all I have. Chairman Keever.
Thank you so much, appreciate it. Commissioner Bagwell, did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, just a general question. I had from some residents during the RTC meeting, people had heard a discussion from one of the other members that talked about the ratio of the parking spaces of those that can be for trailers versus vehicles. And so the question really becomes the usage that you've seen in the lots over the period of time to determine 30 car spots and two trailer spots. What was that based on? Why isn't it more trailer spots? I mean, that's the question that I've received since the RTC meeting is, do we have enough trailer? Who's overall using this? And again, is this what we want for the next 30 years? I mean, that's what we're trying to plan for. So that was the general question I had.
So we were looking at, or staff has looked at what's existing on the ground right now. And so we're commonly seeing 20 plus vehicles, sometimes 30 plus vehicles. Recently, with COVID, it's been much higher, but that's the exception. We're not planning for that kind of exception. But we don't see a lot of trailers, but we do know that there is demand for trailers. We've tried to base the number of parking spaces on what's comparable to other locations in the area. We looked, we compared to Hunter Creek in Washoe County, which similarly has a trail to a waterfall and some other connections. And they've got about 25 car spaces and I believe parking for about two trailers. So, or two equestrian trailers. So that's, you know, we're kind of just looking at what other communities have done with similar areas and then looking at our existing capacity and just trying to come up with the number.
Any other comments or concerns from the commission?
I want to say I appreciate this. I went up a couple times during March and April and the parking was just chaotic at best. You know, I saw mountain bikers traveling over people's yards and lawns. No consideration. So anything we could do to assist the residents up there, we should do that. But I do have two questions. Regarding the gates, could we put in the solar gates that we have in the rifle range or out of Brunswick so they automatically close? Something like that an option? And then if we narrow the road, would emergency vehicles still be able to access it, or would that pose any type of danger to their operations? Those would be my questions.
Yeah, those are good questions, and I think that those are questions that we probably need to discuss among staff as we move forward with our recommendations to Central Federal Lands. It's valid that, would emergency vehicles not be able to get in there at night, so we would have to have a combination for that. What about vehicles that are parked there when we get up there to lock the gates? What do we do, in that circumstance? And then also, is a possibility to have automatic gates? Those are valid questions, and I think those are all ones that we still need to look at and consider.
All right. Last chance for anybody on the Park Commission. Any comments or concerns?
This is Commissioner Byfield. Just had a couple of things. I read through a lot of the residents' comments and concerns, and a couple of things kind of stood out to me. I thought one concern was over speeding on the road, if it was improved. And I wondered if there was any consideration for maybe one of the radar signs for traffic calming. Seems to me that that's one of the more effective traffic calming devices like we have in the school zones. So that was one thing that I thought of.
The other thing that kind of stood out, it seems like all the residents are concerned about, you know, from our previous meetings, about space on the road, particularly for egress in emergency situations, and room for the horse trailers and so on and so forth. And they were also concerned about the congestion from the parking. And, you know, it seems to me like these improvements would actually address those concerns instead of making it worse. The other objection I saw to that was that they were fearful that it would be overused if the facilities were improved like this. I guess my observation is that the facilities are already overused and there's no provision for remediation. And to me, this project provides a fair degree of mitigation for the for their concerns. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments.
Okay, let's get comments from members of the Open Space Advisory Committee. Would anybody like to ask staff any questions or make any comments before we open this up to public comment?
Bruce, this is Margie. Go ahead, Donna.
Go ahead, Margie.
Mike, I wanted to go on record that I really like the idea of making that area a one-way. I think it would help the flow of traffic a whole lot. And if you didn't make the footprint smaller, making it smaller would be beneficial in many ways, but if we still need 30 spaces or so, maybe we could expand a little bit elsewise. All I had.
Thank you, Margie. Donna.
Yeah, I agree with Margie. Making it one way is just far more efficient, and if we can reduce the size a little bit, but I definitely am against reducing the number of parking spaces. I think in the future we're going to need the 30, and we do need 30 parking spaces, but making it one way is definitely a good idea. It's safer making it one way. Otherwise, I think this is wonderful, and I think it's going to mitigate a lot of the problems that we see up there with the chaos that we have right now, and it's going to be just so much better, and I think everybody's going to be much happier once we've completed this. I know it's going to be a hard process next year, but I think it's going to just be so much better.
Thank you, Donna. Any other comments from Open Space Committee members? Okay, I had a couple of things. I'm sorry?
There's this is Jerry, I have.
Oh, Jerry, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Will there be a chance for the committee to comment after the public comments are made?
You bet. If you'd like to, we'll have that opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or anything at this point from either Open Space or Parks? I did have a couple things. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Jeremy.
Thank you. So I focused this agenda item a lot on the public comments. And there were several things that resonated with me. I'm on the fence with the number of parking spots, but I do recognize, like Donna pointed out, that as this area becomes more popular and it continues to become more popular, we're going to need those spaces. But I don't know if there's an opportunity with the 70% design to consider maybe some overflow parking up the road. And maybe address some of the residents' concerns about the number of parking spots. If we limited it to, let's say, 15 parking spots and then had overflow up the road in, a wide spot in the road, I'm not sure how far up the road it would have to be, but that could address those concerns of moving all those spaces away from the residences. The other comments that I focused on was relocating the trailhead. I'm not sure if that's been something that's been considered, moving it, you know, moving away farther up the road rather than having the starting point right next to that top driveway. That seems like something that that should be taken under consideration. I'm actually not really a big fan of the bathroom. If I was a resident up there, that I would have the biggest problem with the bathroom. We're talking about a quarter mile trail, and it's used and abused, and this area is overflowing with people, but it's a quarter mile. Even with my little kids, I'm fairly certain I could get them to hold it until we got back home. But I do like the idea of a garbage can. I think that's a great idea. As far as the last comment I have is about the horse trailers. In all the years I've been going up here, I've never encountered a horse on this trail. Not to say that they're not there all the time. It's just I'm up there about as often as Kurt is, and I've never seen a horse. So perhaps one stall instead of two might help reduce the congestion and the available spaces in that small little limited area. Those are all my comments.
Thank you, Jeremy. Staff, did you want to address the one question with regard to moving the trailhead?
Yeah, this is Greg Bergen. We are moving the trailhead. In fact, if you look on this on the screen that's up here, look over cursor up there. So this is where the signage and the restroom and everything are. And then this is a proposed beginning of the new for a new trailhead. And that may not be the exact way the trail goes, because right now it's on a pretty steep cut slope. But we do plan on relocating the trailhead. Right now it's over here, and so all the everybody is starting right next to the Stokes driveway, and it's just, there is a lot of congestion there. So we would be able to eliminate a lot of that. Now for people that are hiking. Okay, so for people that are hiking like the Upper Kings Loop or the Ashley Kings, they would still be coming in on this North Kings Canyon Road, so there would still be a few people coming down here, but the majority of people would be starting at this end to go to the waterfall. And I might add that the waterfall is not the only trail that is accessed from here. There's the Upper Kings Loop and the Ashley Kings Trail. The North Kings Loop, and then the other planned connections, plus just broader access to U.S. Forest Service lands, and the trailer parking is also available to vehicles that are pulling ATVs or dirt bikes. That are we do have requests for that access for the Kings Canyon Road as well.
Thank you, Greg. I'm sorry, Jeremy. Okay. Alan, did you have any questions or comments?
I was just going to respond to Jeremy in a similar way that Greg did, and said there's increasing use going north up the road. And I was up there just last week, and between the time I left the trailhead to the upper waterfall, I think I saw 10 people. So that's, 45 minutes. So I think that there's been a dramatic increase in demand for that as well. I mean, it's COVID, obviously, in part, but I think people are recognizing that you can do that more and more.
Thank you, Alan. A couple of questions for staff. Are all the improvements to the road itself within the existing right-of-way?
The road improvements, particularly the driveway improvements, will require some temporary permissions to enter property to be able to construct those. So we'll be working with a surveyor to map out the property lines and eventually get agreements in place with those property owners so that we can construct the project improvements.
Okay, but the roadway itself.
But the roadway itself is within the existing right of way.
Thank you. Does that bearded guy next to you have something he wants to say?
Sorry, Derek, from the record. There are a few right-of-way issues that we need to work with.
the Stoke sign, and that has to do with the upper drainage crossing. But we do believe a lot of these are public utility easements. But as those details continue to flesh out, there might be some right-of-way issues on the Stokes' property. But for the most part, we are within the 60-foot right-of-way. Thank you. Yeah, the Stokes are by far the most impacted property here, so I hope you treat them well. A couple of other questions. The lower crossing, do we consider it to be adequate from a capacity perspective with no further improvements in terms of its size, other than a couple of head walls, I guess?
Bruce, this is Rob Ellis. I'm the floodplain manager and also the stormwater engineer for Carson City. The lower crossing was sized for a 10-year event, which is about 350 CFS. So I believe it's adequate based on the past history of the flood events of 86, 97, 2005.
And the roadway improvements, will they start just below that crossing? How do they relate to the crossing itself?
The pavement starts pretty much at our patch for our bypass culvert and then heads west. And then there's a few details of connecting head walls and a little bit of fencing.
Right. Essentially right there.
Yes.
I guess those are the questions I had for staff at this time. Thank you all for your presentations, and we may have some others that come up through public comment. Yes. Leanne, I'm sorry.
No. I had a question. Didn't we decide on a bathroom up there because we heard testimony in the fall that the residents were being adversely impacted by people knocking on their door asking to use the bathrooms and other things of that nature? Didn't we have that testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have heard comments for and against, but yes, you are remembering correctly. We have heard those comments as well. The Forest Service, I will mention, was pretty adamant about the restroom and wanting to have it there, and this facility is on Forest Service land, and it was a recommendation from them. I did want to add on a comment, too, about adding additional parking up the roadway. From a staff perspective, we talked about we can't make it part of this project, but we thought we could talk to the Forest Service about maybe adding some like parking nodes down the road. So if we went up, then maybe there would be some little places where we could have one or two cars that could be able to park along the roadway up the Forest Service land, and maybe work with them on an option for that. And then it might provide a potential location to turn around up there, or, you know, for snow storage or other opportunities. But we could work as maybe a part of a future project with the Forest Service on that.
Yes, thank you. Alan, did you have something
further? I'm just going to add, if you move ahead with those discussions, I'd urge you to include a discussion of parking at the actual trailhead itself. Hopefully an opportunity to turn around, except to be, if that road is improved, I would expect to see quite a few more cars up there.
Okay, we will have opportunity after public comment for any further questions or comments from committee members. With that, I'd like to open it up to public comment. We've had a number of written comments. And I think some of those who have commented in writing are also on the phone. I would ask you to be concise in your comments, if you would. And we want to hear what your concerns are and anything that you may want to add to what you previously submitted, if you have already submitted something, and also to what you've heard tonight. So with that, Mr. Traffic Moderator, can you start the public comments?
Caller, it is your turn for public comment. Please state your name for the record.
Scott Poole, I'm a resident in Kings Canyon, and I'd like to address a couple of issues, safety and environmental degradation. For safety, I do appreciate the response of the planners to address speed concerns, to discuss maybe narrowing the road. The road width is a concern because the road that feeds this section of the project from Carson City up to the lower creek crossing is only 23 feet wide. And so having a wider road above that creates a potential problem. We're not really addressing the ability of people to use a wider road for that stretch from Longview Lane up to the Lower Creek crossing. Secondly, I'd like to just question the vehicle traffic, the parking up there. Has there been a traffic parking study done? I've heard numbers of 30, 50 vehicles up in that area, and I don't think that's accurate. I did do a Google map and did a satellite overview, and at the most, with parking up and down the Forest Service Road and 1 in 10 vehicles parked side by side in the current cul-de-sac, at the most, I could count maybe 30 vehicles at any given time. So I question the assertion that there have been upwards of 50 vehicles up in the area. So I'd like to know if there's been any kind of a mapping of vehicles in the current area to see how many we really do need. And that speaks to the demand versus degradation issue, demand versus management. I was up at the waterfall last weekend. There were 6 vehicles down in the area. And when I got up to the waterfall area, there was no room for me to walk into the waterfall area because there were the people, you know, you got 4 or 5 people on the south side of the waterfall, 7 or 8 people on the north side, and you can't even get in or out of it. So we do have I have a concern about increasing demand to the waterfall. I understand this project opens up a much wider portion of the canyon. And so that speaks to the third issue, which is I would like it to be considered that the parking lot itself be moved further south, maintaining that original cul-de-sac as a turnaround for emergency vehicles with no parking in that cul-de-sac. If we relocated the parking further south, it would take it closer to the beginning of the trailhead, so that would be a good thing. Secondly, I think it would address the SOAK's concern, because the driveway that has been offered to them would be unpassable in a larger vehicle in the winter, for sure. It's an uphill slope and then a 90-degree turn into their residence, and I'm not sure how they would manage that turn. And so if you move the parking lot further south up that Kings Canyon Road, maintain the cul-de-sac as it exists right now, that would give a circular turnaround for emergency vehicles. Which leads me really to my final point, and I do appreciate that there have been good interaction between the planners and public, and I feel like our concerns as a citizen for responsible access have been listened to and trying to be addressed. The reason for public comment, of course, is that many heads are going to give you better solutions than just one. There was a comment made that school buses come halfway up the canyon, and there's a turnaround loop at Lye Street, which is technically a private easement, private road, Bobcat Lane. But about halfway up this project, there is a turnaround loop, and it was mentioned that was the turnaround for school buses. And I'd like to correct the record on that. I think my wife was a school bus driver, and this was her route, and the school buses were required to come up to the top of the canyon and make a turnaround. What actually happens in practice is the school buses get to where those mailboxes are, where that quote turnaround is right now at 4200 Kings Canyon, and then they back up and do their U-turn there, which I think is a violation of the school bus safety protocols. So I appreciate your listening to part of comments, and I would ask that we encourage that there be more working with the public to make this project better than it already is, and to hopefully avoid some unintended consequences. I think what are some very good ideas by having people think through these issues from different perspectives. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for your comments, Scott. Do we have other public comment?
Yes, caller, is your turn for public comment? Please state your name for the record.
I will go if nobody else is going.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ernie Walsh, 5149 King Canyon Road. I'm on the opposite side of the Stokes, directly below the parking area. And I have I would like to offer something as far as roadway width. I am definitely in favor of the 26-foot roadway. However, if they wanted to keep the road bed itself larger, that would allow probably 6 feet at the work width, bike lane now, as a paved area, which would also allow for hikers and equestrians to travel up the road without being on a paved surface. That's my only comment on that. As far as the toilets, I have been adamant at both the meetings I've attended about the restrooms. I see no need for the restroom, definitely not any need for a two-stall toilet. I would think that at the very least, a single stall with a unisex sign would adequately take care of anybody if they had to wait in line for 10 minutes, which is a big deal. It's going to lower the visual imprint as far as for us looking at it. And also, I like the idea, if possible, of having one-way road, which would hopefully lessen the footprint. And for me, it'll keep me from looking at a 40-foot high slope if it could be lessened. Right now, it's hard to tell from the plans what the actual elevations are, but it looks to me like it might be somewhere around like a 30 to 40-foot fill slope when that projects down into the canyon to get the width, even for that parking lot. Also, I think for the parking, everybody knows it's bad coming down towards us. So I would think you could do something with posting as far as no traffic, no parking between signs, and run those signs for 500 feet below the parking area, which would get the cars out of the immediate area close to my house, and would not a tollway zone, because the tollway for the city is a problem, but with the no parking between signs, the sheriff could come up and write a parking ticket, and eventually people would get the word that it's been done. That's pretty much my comments. I did submit a list of comments to the RTC commission meeting. However, according to Dirk, it failed to get to them. But I did send an email to Dirk regarding today's meeting with my comments and also my comments for the RTC. So I would like those to get on the record. Appreciate it. Thank you to the commission. Thank you to the city for including us in the design. We appreciate it. We hope to get this mitigated to a good project. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ernie, your comments have been received. They will be in the record. I believe I saw two different comments. So, okay, further public comment.
Caller, it is your turn for public comment. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. This is Charles Clemson, Chick Clemson, on some of your letters. And I also live in the canyon. I don't live on East Canyon Road per se, but I've lived here for 30 years and have a little bit of perspective as to what goes on, what a special place this is. I'd like to stress, first of all, that we are, those of us that live here are very fortunate. We're very proud. And I'm much impressed in discussing with my neighbors, especially as regards this plan, how little opposition there is really to more access, more people coming. We actually, I think, look forward to sharing the asset that we have. That said, looking back and reviewing the plan, I'd like to start first with the application process, only from the standpoint that having reviewed the early application that occurred, I think December 8th in 2017, there were a number of supporting letters, and I think one of the best reasoned and best expressed letters that actually originated from someone in parks, and just to quote a couple of, I think, cogent and important thoughts in this letter. One is, in meeting the needs to expand or enhance federal land access, this grant is also identifying the need to make those access roads and trailheads as safe as possible. That's something we're totally on board with. In fact, a small group of us have formed a committee and initiated a petition campaign with requests directed entirely towards increasing the safety. I think that is critical. I think it's important that that was mentioned from the very outset in this, this process. In more than several ways, I wonder if we've not lost sight of that a little bit as regards to the plan itself. But the conclusion of this letter, briefly, as described in the Carson City Open Space Plan and the U.S. Forest Service Environment Assessment, environmental stewardship is important. Therefore, all designs or improvements should minimize impacts to our natural resources. I think that will be critical. And starting with the parking facility, we're going to pave a piece of paradise in doing that. And then depending on whether you put 15 or 50 parking places, it's just more of this beautiful land that we're paving. And the environmental impact of that is not good. I understand and have been educated a little bit that there are such things as low impact designs where we could not necessarily put paving in. They could still be plowed, they can still be striped, and they don't create the drainage problems and the loss of resource that pavement does. That's not been really discussed as an adjunct to the plan. Overall, looking at access and with the consideration that I think access is important. It's going to become increasingly important. One of our commissioners commented here just a few moments ago about this is really a 30-year impact that we're looking at. You have to look in your crystal ball a little bit and imagine what the consequence of much more traffic, much more use of this area is going to have as an impact on the environment, on wildlife, on safety in particular. And if you consider all that, it sort of occurred to me, gee, it's strange that no one is talking about having more public access for people who necessarily can't drive or don't want to drive up here. We have an excellent bus system in Carson City, Jump Around Carson, with environmentally friendly vehicles. Instead of putting another 20 parking places in, or 30 parking places, why not put this on the bus schedule? Why not bring people from the middle school at the base of the canyon and come every 2 hours on busy times? Why are we focused narrow vision-wise on having to have an expanding number of parking places necessarily to provide access? I've written a couple of letters about the fact that the waterfall trail itself is pretty maximally utilized during busy times and way overutilized during this COVID crisis. The other day I walked up and because the trail has literally been eroded away by foot traffic, the last 40 feet or so of the trail before you get to the waterfall is in no area more than 2 feet wide. It used to be 4 or 5 feet wide. And then the actual viewing area, which get the best view of the waterfall, is up against the rock face of the cliff above. And I measured it the other day. It measures 36 by 18 inches. I had some discussion during the COVID crisis with how healthy and safe this was, given the fact that we were supposed to be socially distancing and avoiding contact, and we had as many as 100 people at a time on that trail. So that kind of goes back to why is this considered as safe as possible? We aren't being any safer, and if we go to safety as far as the road, which is a major concern to me, mine, I've practiced medicine in this community for 40 years, and my whole perspective in practicing medicine was as much as possible to prevent to improve health. And I'm concerned that we have great growth they want to build from just the Lower Creek crossing, starting after the crossing itself being much narrower than the proposed 30 feet for the road. We want to basically improve this road, make it wider, more open, straighter, smoother, and faster. The grade as it exists now varies from about 8.5 to as much as 14 degrees. Bicycles coast down that road at in excess of 45 miles an hour. I drive that road. If I'm not paying attention and riding my brake all the way or downshift into second gear, I'm going 40 miles an hour in the blink of an eye. A speed limit sign or even a radar sign isn't going to compensate for the unique grade of this road. And when you get used to that in a nice wide road and all of a sudden you come to that narrow creek crossing where there may be a bicyclist or two in the crossing or there's a deer crossing, the potential for disaster is tremendous. And if you make it through that little bottleneck and you don't get a deer and you don't encounter another vehicle and you make it around the curve, which has limited visibility, now you have 3/4 of a mile of the probably most dangerous stretch of road in all of Carson City. And that dangerous stretch of road is the only access to this wonderful new project with increased access and significantly increased traffic. And we're talking consequences 10 years, 15 years down the road as it becomes maybe more used and more traffic. And looking at all those things, I wonder, how are we making this as safe as possible? How are we really improving the access for people who are going to be at risk of injury, serious accidents on the road? We need not to stop this, but we need to really devote more time to planning and looking forward and looking at options like why not have this access serviced by public transportation. We're going to be building more and more at the base of this canyon. There's going to be more demand. We need to look at those things. And I'm afraid this has not happened in this plan. I wanted the Rural Transportation Commission to address, let's have some more time. We've not reached any sort of real consensus or accommodations on most of these issues in the limited time we've had to work with the Planning Commission and Public Works. They've done an excellent job communicating recently, and I think some real productive ideas have come from that, one of which is to make the road a little narrower. That doesn't necessarily make it a better road, but I think it has the potential of making it a safer road because people are less likely to speed on that road.
Dr. Clemenson, if you could, it's been 10 minutes, if you could close out your comments. I know many of those are in the written documents that we already have in the record. So if you could summarize that would be great.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. And in summary, I think that the residents and the more than 150 signatories of our petition, less than half of which were actually residents in the canyon. They're your neighbors, they're your community members. They are interested in making this as safe and as good a project as possible. We need more time. We need to work these questions through. And we need to welcome input from community members, canyon members. And I think that will result in a much better project. And I appreciate your time and attention. I apologize for taking so long. It is a complex issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your comments and your well thought out and cogent letters. Are there any other public comments?
Yes. Caller, would you like to have a public comment? Please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Juan Guzman. I am the Vice President of Motor Power, which is a nonprofit organization that supports safety and vehicle and non-vehicular forms of recreation in Carson City. I'd like to, we have something different than comments, but I'd like to briefly discuss access to begin with. Access is important, not only for King Sky or the board. When you look at open all cash on the city, there are three main accesses servicing into the Cashman range, and those are to the north, Asheron, and Barlett Road, and then Kings Canyon. There, of all of those, only Lakeview have contained some smaller statements in the form of the parking lot as well, and ability to accommodate the motorway vehicle. Kings Canyon is super important because it provides ability to support improvements to not only the waterfall, but as well as the new national trail, recognized national trail, as well as some of the groups that are in the plan and are being general shovel ready to begin construction, and some of the existing trails already, in addition to the off-road of using Kings Canyon for access itself. Regarding the specifics then as to the design, the 70% design, we believe that the parking sector at the minimum is an adequate number. We believe that the striping and providing the driving by training is also important. We believe that it will help both the pedestrians and equestrians and bicycles using the road, as well as vehicles that get safety. We believe that revising the parking lot into a one-way loop system provides for a better, safer parking lot. The dependence of vehicles to accommodate moving of bicycles and bring people is essential in our nation, even when the possibility of accessing the cycle to buses is also good. I think that we will still need a considerable amount of parking space. It is good to have a bathroom. And I appreciate the design containing the bathroom, and I also appreciate the effort being made to move the bathroom further away from the residences, the watches and the stores. That is really welcome. Similarly, the sidewalk network necessary to move people from the parking lot into the traffic is important, and we believe it's a good element of the plan. Finally, we want to issue a congratulation to the Parks and Recreation Department and the Public Works Department for being able to cooperate under such a fantastic condition for a project of this magnitude that is extended at a relatively affordable cost to our residents. That is a great thing being done. Thank you very much for the opportunity to participate. If there are any questions, what of you know where to find me? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Guzman. Are there other public comments?
Yes. Caller, it is your turn to public comment. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Ken Stokes, and I live at 4400 Kings Canyon Road. My name has been mentioned a few times. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I've got all sorts of answers to a lot of questions that people ask, but I'm going to try to keep this as brief as possible. I've lived in the canyon a long time. When I was a youngster, we moved up here in 1968. Family purchased property early on, it was a dirt road from what we call the second crossing up to where our property is. So we've seen a lot of change since then. It's an understatement to say that our quality of life up here has been substantially impacted. We used to live in a fairly tranquil area, and it's just steadily been impacted over the years. One of the things that has really been a little bit painful is during the COVID 19 situation, my house, my home up here has been nicknamed the visitor center. And there's so many people that are up here, and the parking's been crazy. And I know a couple of members mentioned that that there weren't all that many vehicles, but on a weekend, way on prior to COVID, you would get 30 to 50 vehicles here, but they were all parked in the up and down the road. It wasn't safe. Kids were running in and out. So I think something needs to be done, and I've met with your staff. They've been very helpful, very polite, very professional. I'm talking about Greg and Dirk and Chris at the most recent meeting. Some of the things that are hopefully going to be addressed are the nighttime activity. I mean, when you walk down to the bottom of your driveway in the morning and there's trash, there's rubbers, there's drug paraphernalia, syringes, and they've been partying the night before, beer bottles everywhere, on a fairly regular basis. So I'm hoping that as we implement rules, I'm hoping that we're going to be able to enforce the rules, whatever they are. And the whole idea of being able to lock and stop the parking lot at night, that's a welcome, that's very welcome. The fact that they moved the restroom as far away as possible, that's welcome as well. We have been in discussion with the staff about moving our driveway. And at first I wasn't in favor of it, and in talking to my wife, I became in favor of it. And as we look at the overall plan, the existing driveway, the proposed driveway on the map is unacceptable to us. We would like the entrance of our driveway to be as far away from whatever's happening at that parking lot as possible. And we're in favor of an entry that's closer to the creek, and it's a smoother transition into our home and our driveway. And I think that trailers and things would be able to navigate it much better than the proposed one that was there. We talked about different sizes of the roads. My main concern, having been involved in development and cities and budgets and what have you, is that the chances are we're probably going to overshoot the budget here. And so my point is that if you can shave the road from 28 feet to 26 feet, and in doing so, you create a little extra money, so we're able to complete the changes that need to be made at Ernie's driveway or at my driveway, that's something that I hope we take into account. I was not able to speak at the RTC meeting, but I watched it later, and really there was only one board member that really zeroed in on the 28 feet or the 26 feet, and then a staff member asked for a clarification, and they made a clarification to go from 26 to 28. So I think the willingness to make it a little bit smaller, I think is a good thing and shows good faith. And again, my concern is that we analyze everything so we have enough money to make the improvements, because I think I'm certainly one of the most impacted people. And during the summer, you walk out and there's 30 to 50 cars parked out there. You walk out my driveway, there's my door, and you look up and there's people, 30 to 40 people on the path right above my
front door, and at night my wife had to put earplugs in because of the loud music and the partying. So we're in favor of something being done, but we're hoping that it's again, I'm repeating myself, but I'm hoping that whatever we do, whatever rules are implemented, that we enforce them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ken. Other public comment?
Yes. Caller, please, your turn. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Maya McKenzie, and I live at McKinney Canyon. I do want to reiterate that I think that both Mr. Stokes and Mr. Walsh made excellent points, and they are the most impacted, so hopefully their needs are seriously considered. I also agree with Dr. Clemenson that the safety of the road is where the road is most dangerous is at the Lower Creek crossing. And anyone who lives up here knows that. It's when we're teaching our children how to drive, we teach them that that is where you have to go really slowly. That road, if there's a steep incline there, the road gets narrower, it's shaded on both sides, and I am certain there are a lot of accidents that occur there. I think it'd be interesting to do a study to see where these accidents are occurring. I'm sure they're all occurring between the Lower Creek crossing and Longview Way. I feel that there needs to be some significant interest and concern about making that aspect or that area of the road safer before you start to encourage even more people to come up here. Additionally, once you start to go up, I'm not clear as to why you would be improving the upper part of the road before you make that safe for people. A lot of people have lost their lives on that part of the road. Secondly, it is important. It feels like a lot of these road improvements are being focused on bike riders. Hikers, people in hiking boots do not want to walk up pavement. There were comments about people having to ride horses up here. I own horses in the King Canyon. I don't ride up there anymore because it's too dangerous on that tiny little strip of dirt with people flying up and down the road to ride a horse there. There used to be a large number of people that would park their horse trailers at the top of King Canyon. But because of the traffic over the last couple of years, I've seen that number dwindle down to none, because if you're hauling a big horse trailer up there, there are very, very slim chance that you're going to have anywhere to park. So the comment about no horses are up there is because access has already been cut off for horses. So I do appreciate looking at the road, taking it to 26 feet. I think that more than 2 feet of space of unpaved road on the side of the road is crucial for walkers and for horses. If you sat there for one day and watch the people walking up and down the road, you will see that our people walk on the side of the road. They do not walk on the pavement. I appreciate that King's Canyon is beautiful. I understand that people want to appreciate it. So I understand why there are improvements that are wanted to be made. I'm just very concerned that the improvements are being looked at being made, and you're ignoring the safety of our citizens, where the safety of our citizens needs to be approached lower down, both at the Lower Creek crossing and below.
Maya, thank you so much for your comments. We appreciate them. Do we have another caller? Any other public comment?
Yes, go ahead. Caller, it is your turn to public comment. Please state your name for the record.
I'm sorry, I have no comment. I'm just using this as my audio feed. I was having trouble otherwise hearing, but thank you. I have no comment.
Thank you. That is it for public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We'll take it back now to committee members. Leanne, let's go through any further comments or questions that members of Parks Commission have, and then we'll go to open space after that.
Do any of the Park and Recreation Commission members have any comments or concerns about this? Commissioner Begwa, you're here, I'll ask you. Any from the other commission members? I don't hear any material from Scott.
This is Kurt.
A little bit of light. Go ahead, Kurt, please.
Kurt.
Go ahead, please.
So straight back to the city, a lot of those residents are concerned about the safety and the size of the road and that kind of pinch point there at the Lower Creek crossing. Can that be addressed in this project? And if it can be addressed in this project, how so? That'd be a question directed to this traffic engineer.
I think, go ahead.
Chris Martinovich, excuse me, Chris Martinovich for the record, transportation traffic engineer, Carson City. I think we can discuss some additional options with the Central Federal Lands about what can be done. There are a lot of limitations at a particular location with some of the irrigation control and some of the other existing piping. We can certainly take a look and see what kind of options are available.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. That sounds like one of the most concerning things as far as safety is concerned. And the thing is, so the other thing I heard is the toilet. And Jennifer, am I correct in assuming that this project has to go forward with the toilet in it for the federal U.S. Forest Service?
It's for Jennifer Bench, Parks and Recreation Director. We did follow up with the Forest Service after the last round of design comments, and they were pretty adamant about having that. Staff was willing to go down to a one-unit restroom, as you know, many people have brought up. The Forest Service was opposed to that, and based on their data and the use and what they've observed at that site and to be standard with other trailheads, they were pretty adamant about having, you know, a two-unit restroom. We can follow up with them again to see if a one unit would be acceptable to them. We're definitely supportive of that as long as the Forest Service is as well, because the project is on their land and it is their asset in the long run.
Well, thank you for doing that. I think that's what I'm also hearing from the public not having bathroom would be best, but a one stall bathroom smaller would be second choice. So is there time, like Chick mentioned, Dr. Clemson mentioned, as far as to push this off, and if these things aren't settled by the time December comes around, we can go past that date there. My question earlier on, as far as when it goes back to the Board of Supervisors, I asked that, is just to make those people in the canyon as happy as we possibly can with this project.
Fair point for the record, the original plan was to construct this project in 2020. It was delayed partly because of comments, getting comments back to them, and COVID-19 and all that stuff. So, staff is committed to keeping the project on schedule. There are repercussions from, a budget standpoint that would need to be considered if the schedule is extended.
Okay. And then last question is probably you can answer this also is the driveway that the Stokes need put into this project so they can access their property with big trailers or anything else they need to do?
Staff is happy to work with the Stokes. We've been working with them from day one. And their comments on the driveway are all received. And as we continue to finalize some of the details of the trailhead, staff will be pushing extremely hard at the Central Federal Lands to see if we can relocate that driveway to the north, close to the stream.
Thank you. And then the other comment that was two people talked about in the public comment was, can this whole footprint be pushed to the south?
The footprint of the existing trailhead has been pushed to the south. This is kind of the final location of the trailhead, and that was one of the things that we accomplished with the presentation of the 30%. There have been project extent limits that have been identified, and the environmental process for the years has started, and so it's not in the scope of the grant to kind of push it any farther down the road.
Well, thank you for that. I just needed to bring that up because I did hear that a couple times, and I just want to say thank you to you and your staff on all of the things that I read. Everybody has been praising the city on getting back to them and working with them, and I think that just was great, so thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the Park and Recreation Commission members? Bruce?
Okay, comments from Open Space Committee. Jerry, why don't you start off? If you had some comments, you'd ask that earlier.
Thanks, Bruce, but my concerns have been addressed.
I appreciate your brevity. Other comments from Parks, from Open Space?
This is Donna Emerson. I just wanted to say that I really appreciate Dr. Clemens' remarks about encouraging public transportation to trailheads. I believe in that fully. I think really our problem is more getting the public to use it and appreciate it, and I would love to see it, but how we can get the public to use it if we were to offer it. I've seen it tried, like up at Lake Tahoe, and it just doesn't get used. So Dr. Clemenson would like to come up with some ideas on how to get the public to use it if we offered it. I think that would be wonderful.
Anything else, Donna?
I would like to say that I appreciate all the hard work that the staff has put into this. It's been a long road, and I know there's a lot more to go, and I know it's really hard to get something together that everybody is going to be really happy with, and nothing's going to be perfect, but they've worked very hard on this.
Thank you. Any other comments from Open Space Committee members?
I have a comment.
Yes, Margie.
This is Margie. I was listening to the option, to Mr. Commissioner Meyer asking how, if we could delay this until we can get everything right. And we just wanted to comment that if we lose this money, we won't get anything. That preferable to not having perfection. Just putting it out there. I don't know the answer. I'm not suggesting an answer. I just want people to keep that in mind.
Thank you, Margie. Any other parks, I'm sorry, Open Space Committee member comments? All right. I have a couple of thoughts just from hearing a lot of concern and a lot of comments from folks in the neighborhood and others who are just generally concerned about the potential issues. I guess my sense would be that I like the larger parking area because I honestly think you're going to create a situation where you have a controllable, gateable, manageable, enforceable area. You can sign Kings Canyon Road for no parking, but if you have 15 spaces at the top and 30 or 40 people wanting to be in them, you're going to have people parking, and I think you're creating a potential for a worse situation than having a manageable parking lot. We do have, I think, a real responsibility to accept enforcement here, given the nature of the lack of enforcement that's there now. We have park rangers who can do what the deputy sheriffs are not able to do unless they're called, and I think we can actually improve the situation. I personally don't see much difference between two stalls and one stall for a bathroom. It's essentially the same building. We move it away as far as we can from the residences. And frankly, I don't think it's going to really make much difference other than there's an extra stall to be kept clean by our Parks and Rec staff. But I do see it as more of a convenience. Being a person who uses the restroom more than some of the younger folks in the audience. I think safety is important, and I think we really need to defer to the traffic engineering folks. I'm not sure that a narrower road really does anything except put the bicycles and pedestrians closer to the traffic. I think that's something we really ought to leave to the transportation professionals to make that final determination. I'm just afraid that it will not have the desired effect. And the last comment I would make to my RTC friends is, I think you should be thinking long-term about extending this back down to King Street, down to Longview, or at least even to Orangeby, for the full width of the improvements, so we don't have the neck down ultimately. And that would be a long-term kind of thing to at least get it to the school. Those are my comments. Is there anything more from staff? Yes, sir.
I just want to say that staff does appreciate all the comments that we received. We definitely have identified there's a lot of existing issues out there, and our aim is to fix as many of those issues as we can with the resources that we have. And so we do appreciate all of the comments and all the discussions that have gone on.
Thank you. And a sign, a speed sign that flashes your speed might be a real good idea for King Canyon Road coming down. Lindsay, did you have a comment?
I do. So for the record, Lindsay Blair, Open Space Manager. I just wanted to add in that, you know, we certainly hear everyone's concerns as it relates to the environmental impacts, and that's something that we're eager to address as we have increased use up there. So not as a component of this flat grant project, but, you know, in addition to, we've talked about the potential of adding a boardwalk feature or railing up at the top of the waterfall to try to, you know, limit how many people are actually gaining access to the waterfall itself. We've also talked about the potential to add, some more fencing and split rail fencing up there, just to try to keep people on the trail and prevent some of the cutting of switchbacks that happens, which leads to erosion. So there are some things that we're looking at implementing to address those concerns, and we'll also be kind of implementing a monitoring plan and going forward just to keep track of the erosion that's happening up there. I know there's a project in the works as well to put in a retaining wall near the top as well to help keep people on the trail. So there's some mitigations that can be done to address that aspect as well.
Thank you, Lindsay. I think we heard a number of concerns that that are very valid and legitimate when something's being sort of loved to death. So I think that's great, and hopefully we can, from an open space perspective, we can look hard at having some of those in place by the time some of these improvements are done. Yes?
So just as one other comment, during the RTC meeting, we had an individual that had discussed some fire safety issues, and so I do want to let all of you on this commission and committee know that we did, as RTC, direct staff to please look into installing water tanks to be able to hold water up there, 10,000 gallons, because we were told that when the power goes out, you've got a fire emergency, they don't have any water, their wells are off. And so I really want to tell the public how much I appreciate their working with us and their comments, and that this has been one of the greatest groups to really work hand in hand to try and get the best project possible. And so I'm also hopeful we can meet that fire danger and mitigate that and just wanted to again thank all of those, Dr. Clemenson and Mr. Walsh and Scott and all of you. What a pleasure it is to work with people in a community that just want to make a project better. So I'm also cognizant of your comment, let's see, I think Ms. McKenzie also did, about the lower roadway. And we'll have to see from the RTC perspective where that can fit in all of our goal sets and long-range planning, but it is, I've taken notice, I guess that's what I can say, to bring that backwards to the RTC committee for looking at that priority. So thank you all very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Laura. Okay, moving forward with item 3B, discussion and possible recommendation to the Board of Supervisors for approval of the draft master Prison Hill Recreation Area Master Plan, which includes topics suggested by Open Space member Jerry Massad and the Open Space Committee. They're bailing out on you, Greg. Go ahead.
I'm just trying to bring up okay, Prison Hill Master Plan. For the record, Greg Bergeron, Trails Coordinator, Parks, Recreation, and Open Space. And all right, so just a little bit of a background. Prison Hill covers about 3,100 acres. Rocky profile is visible from throughout the city. It's the high point within Eagle Valley. And there's many miles of popular trails that are snow free for most of the year. And the south end of Prison Hill has an OHV area. And Prison Hill in recent years has become increasingly popular for outdoor recreation. So in 2016, management plan for Carson City Open Space and Parks in the Carson River area was written. But since 2016, there have been a number of updates, changes, and developments to the area we collectively refer to as Prison Hill. So, Prison Hill, oftentimes we think of Prison Hill as just being the Prison Hill recreation area, but really when we need to look at Prison Hill holistically. And so, Prison Hill is made up of the Prison Hill recreation area, which is about 2,500 acres, the Eagle View open space, which is this little property down in the southeast corner of Prison Hill, about 19 acres, the Mexican Dam open space, which is on the east side of Prison Hill around the dam, and that's 64 acres. There's the Coombs parcel, which is about 114 acres on the west side of Prison Hill at the end of Coombs Lane, and then Silver Saddle Ranch, which is about 800 acres. Sorry about that. Silver Saddle Ranch by 800 acres, but there's about 300 acres that are geographically part of Prison Hill. So the purpose of the master plan, four things. One is to provide an update on activities at Prison Hill since the management plan was written. Number two, we want to provide recommendations to guide future land use planning and management efforts, including trailheads, access points, and trails. We want to incorporate the current planning and management efforts of the OHV area on the south end of Prison Hill. We want to provide recommendations for the 114-acre Coots parcel. And our vision is to help meet the needs of a growing and changing population by providing high-quality recreational opportunities for a variety of users, while at the same time protecting the natural resources, scenic beauty, and conservation values of the property. There are several management guidelines and regulations that had a large impact on how we wrote the master plan. One is the Carson City Municipal Code, Title 13, which affects Carson City Parks and Recreation and Open Space. Another is the Omnibus Public Lands Management Act of 2009, or OPLMA. And so that act in 2015 conveyed certain parcels to Carson City, which included the Prison Hill Recreation Area, Silver Saddle Ranch, and the Coons parcel. And subsequent to OPLMA, there was a conservation easement that was written, and the conservation easement directs how we can manage those lands. It specifically addresses what we can do and what we can't do. And the conservation easement applies to the Prison Hill Recreation Area and the Silver Saddle Ranch. It doesn't apply to the Coons parcel. The conservation easement also allows OHV activity or motorized activity on the south end of Prison Hill. Another part of another guiding document is the programmatic agreement, which is an agreement between the Bureau of Land Management, Carson City, the State Historic Preservation Office, with consultation to the Washoe Tribe, and it addresses how we need to treat and handle cultural resources on Prison Hill Recreation Area, Silver Saddle Ranch, and the Coons Parcel. All right, so planning efforts since 2016. The Eagle Valley Trails Committee report, which was completed in 2017, was a comprehensive evaluation and inventory of existing trails, and they made recommendations for the future. The Unified Pathways Master Plan, which was revised in 2018 to include the updates from the Eagle Valley Trails Committee report. Signage Master Plan for Carson City Parks and Recreation and Open Space Department, which was completed in 2018. The Prison Hill Recreation Area OHV Master Plan, which was previously approved by the Open Space Advisory Committee in 2018, and that was written by consultants that we were able to hire through a grant from the Nevada OHV Commission. The Prison Hill Recreation Area Master Plan Survey, we conducted a survey last summer, which had about 190 respondents, and so a lot of how we did this plan was guided by comments during that survey, which paid attention mostly to that 114-acre Coons parcel, but also asked generic questions about trailheads and access points. And then in January, we had an open house to address the Prison Hill Recreation Area, and we had about 100 attendees that provided a number of comments for us. So the Coons parcel. The Coons parcel which was transferred to us or conveyed to us via OPLMA. Unlike the Prison Hill Recreation Area, it was designated for parks and public purpose. And under that designation, which is a federal designation, there's a lot of things that could happen with that or could be allowed at that parcel. Municipal facilities, hospitals, law enforcement facilities, fire stations, schools, a number of different things. Based on comment that we received from the survey and the open house, what staff recommends is that area be managed essentially like we manage for the Prison Hill Recreation Area under the conservation easement, but with some exceptions like the municipal water infrastructure that Public Works manages in that area. And due to the proximity to the Prison Hill Recreation Area, we do recommend that that area be managed by the Open Space Division in cooperation with Public Works because of their water infrastructure. So what are some of the recommendations on this, on the map that you see? This is kind of a combined effort based on comments from the open house. And so what we want to do is improve the access to the trailhead. So along Coons Lane up to the Coons Trailhead, we would like to improve. So we'd like to improve access to the Clearview Trailhead and improve and make some improvements to the Clearview Trailhead. We recommend placing signage, fencing, barriers to restrict public motorized use off of the trailhead access roads. We recommend decommissioning unnecessary or erosive roads, maintaining a fire break next to homes, coordinating with Public Works on road maintenance. We support Public Works' plan for detention basins, which are in the corner of Valley View and Edmonds Drive, and also on Clearview Drive. We recommend consideration of a crosswalk on Coombs Lane across Edmonds Drive. And we also recommend, so adjacent to the parcel, right in here, which is the 114-acre parcel. Over here, there are six parcels that are owned by the Bureau of Land Management. And there's a lands bill working its way through Congress right now that is requesting BLM to dispose of those properties. And we would recommend that if that happens and they sell those properties, that any kind of development would include upgrade of Coons Lane to city standards. We would also recommend, based on public comment, that our recommendation to the Board of Supervisors that that area be retained as with current zoning, which is single family 1 acre. Actually, I'm going to go back. I'm going to ask Mr. Chairman right now if you would like me to continue through the whole plan, or would you like to provide an opportunity for comment on this particular chapter, which regarding the Coons parcel.
I think I would prefer to go through the plan and we'll come back to Coons parcel. Thank you.
All right, so the Golden Eagle open space, about 19 acres on the southeast corner of Prison Hill. It was purchased using quality of life funds and a Nevada Conservation Resource grant. Recommendations for that property are to manage it as non-motorized dispersed recreation per Carson City Municipal Code 13, which addresses open space, and per the funding agreement, which from the purchase, with emphasis on protection of the Carson River corridor. So this particular property actually is adjacent to the river, and it includes the river corridor. We would recommend decommissioning roads and trails on the steep erodible soils and realigning or constructing new sustainable single track non-motorized trail to connect the Golden Eagle Lane with the scenic overlook and then to the Mexican Ditch Trail. The Mexican Dam open space, about 19 acres, was purchased using quality of life funds. And for this parcel, we would recommend decommissioning or rehabilitation of erosive roads and trails. We would recommend managing the property for non-motorized passive recreation and protection of the Carson River corridor. We recommend improving the trail south of the Mexican Ditch crossing at the dam, and we've actually had conversations with volunteers to undertake that project this fall. We recommend a takeout upstream of the dam for boating recreation. And so that ties into a project that we're almost ready to complete, which is improvement of the crossing at the ditch intake at the dam. So we'll be able to provide access or a portage for boaters to be able to get around the dam, and we can extend the Carson River Aquatic Trail upstream. And then we'd also like to take steps to prevent dirt bike access from across the dam, which we have heard does happen when the waters are very low. Okay, so it's hard to talk about Prison Hill without discussing the state of Nevada's involvement, because they do have parcels that are adjacent to our property and that are involved with our property. So if you see on this map in the upper left-hand corner, the northwest corner, there's a little blue triangle. That's a portion of state-owned land where we just built a new triple loop system of a single-track trail. We have a license from the state of Nevada to maintain those trails on their property. There's also a little tiny piece just below that where it says Prison Hill Recreation Area west of Fairview, and that is a little piece of property that we own. It's on the northwest side of Fairview Drive, and the state of Nevada has solar panels on that property. There's a couple of pieces of property down in the southwest corner. One of them, one piece of our property extends into the prison farm. And then the main entrance to our OHV area on the very south end crosses about 150 feet of state land. So the state is definitely a partner with us on Prison Hill. Trailheads and access points. There are currently five trailheads at Prison Hill, and we propose just relieving those trailheads and making a few improvements. So at the start of the beginning, at the very, very northern end, the Fifth Street trailhead, we just completed some major improvements there, including regrading the parking lot, vault toilet, covered picnic area, and improvements to the trail system. And then Silver Saddle Ranch has three parking areas. We have some small recommendations for Silver Saddle Ranch, including ADA parking and a few other small things. Down at the very south end is the access for the OHV area, the staging area, but it's also accessed by or used by non-motorized users. It's a very, very large parking area, and that is addressed in our OHV management plan. But as far as improvements to the trailhead itself, they would be relatively minimal, not a lot of facilities. So most of the comments we receive from the public are that they don't want to see a lot of facilities, perhaps vault toilets, garbage cans, and things like that. So the pedestrian access points, I didn't finish the trailhead. So there is two more trailheads, the Clearview trailhead and the Coons trailhead, which we addressed earlier. And both of which we have some recommendations for some improvements. Pedestrian access points. These are neighborhood access points. There's no parking. They're used by neighbors to be able to access Prison Hill. And there's five of them around Prison Hill. We recommend leaving those in place. No improvements other than perhaps a post with a sign identifying what it is. Non-motorized trails, as I mentioned, Prison Hill is becoming increasingly popular for hiking and mountain biking. It's especially popular in the winter when west side trails are covered in snow. Prison Hill is available for access usually year-round. Trail planning, we need to make sure that it's done in accordance with Unified Pathways Master Plan to standards that construct trails sustainably. We have recently completed the Fifth Street Loop Trails, and we also recently completed the North Loop realignment, which was completed by Muscle Power, led by Paul Sinnott, and they did an outstanding job reconstructing and realigning that trail. We have several other alignments or realignments that are planned. We need to complete Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act for clearance before we can begin construction or reconstruction on new trails, but everything would be done to standards. And again, Muscle Power is an important partner in that, in helping us to design and build trails. And then for the multi-use loop trail around Fresnel, this is an exciting project that planning for the vision for the multi-use loop trail actually goes back to about 1995. Two segments currently exist, which is the there's a paved trail in the northwest corner along Fairview Drive, and then there's the Mexican Dish Trail from Silver Saddle Ranch to the dam. We broke ground today on the next segment, which will be from go from the Fifth Street Trailhead to Silver Saddle Ranch. And then we have conceptual design for a trail from the Mexican Dam around the south end of the hill and back up to the Fairview Drive Trail. Okay, the OHV area. So, as I mentioned earlier, the OHV management plan was developed in 2018 in partnership with the National Off-Highway Vehicle Conservation Council. It was previously approved by Open Space Advisory Committee on October 15, 2018. We embedded that plan into the master plan, and the only thing that we changed was we removed all references to a new staging area because it's been determined that we do not want to construct a new staging area. The existing staging area is sufficient. Environmental considerations. So the plan includes we're looking at fuels management, especially related to where our property abuts residential homes along in several areas. There's the west side of Prison Hill, and there's also the area down by the dam. We address invasive species management, erosion control and sedimentation. The granitic soils on Prison Hill in certain areas lend themselves to a great deal of erosion, and so there are places where that needs to be addressed. In order to be able to monitor and do our due diligence with managing that area, we have to know what we've got. And so Lindsay Boyer did a fantastic job of putting together a life list. We also included the Golden Eagle survey that we conducted in conjunction with the Nevada Department of Wildlife. And we had a brief discussion of the Carson Valley monkey flower, which is an interesting flower because it's very rare. It only grows in a very limited area in our region. And one of the places that it grows is on Prison Hill. We address visual impacts. There are some old roads, there's some old historic road, or not, I shouldn't say historic, but legacy roads that as we construct new sustainable trails, we should look at decommissioning and virtually erasing some of the scars that are left by these old roads where we can. The OHV area has been used as such for a number of decades. There's a number of visual impacts down there, and there probably will remain some visual impacts, but where we can mitigate those, we should. And then monitoring. We have the Open Space Division. Part of our mission is to monitor our properties, and so that's ongoing. We also are working on a specific monitoring plan for the OHV area. Event guidelines. We are getting an increasingly large number of requests for events, and we have a plan for a framework for a plan for events in the motorized area that was developed in conjunction with our partners from the National Off-Highway Vehicle Conservation Council. We also have observed historically that running races like the Escape from Prison Hill race have had very little impact. But going forward, if we get requests for more, what may be potentially more impactful events like mountain biking events, we need to look at those carefully. And so we're taking a conservative approach. We need to consider event size. we need to consider frequency, and we need to make sure that events are in alignment with the open space vision and mission. And so I think we don't really have a solid, specific plan for events, but we will take an approach where we'll visit events at a small size and then monitor and evaluate and make determinations as we go along as to what we can sustainably handle at Prison Hill. As far as signage, we'll utilize the signage master plan for our department. We have recommendations to place MUTCD signs on streets as needed for direction. Kiosk sign at each trailhead, which we now have a kiosk sign at Fifth Street, and we just recently placed kiosk signs at Clearview and Coons. Small trail access or small trail sign at each access point, and interpretive sign guidelines. Interpretive signs are, we see those as being very beneficial. I know Lindsay and I are very excited about being able to put up some interpretive signs, but we also need to be cautious as to not impact undeveloped character of Prison Hill. So we need to be careful about where, how we do those. The plan includes a pretty comprehensive list of appendices, some of which are available online, and some of which are included will be included in the plan itself. And that concludes my presentation, so we'll take questions.
Thank you, Greg. A very comprehensive draft by the staff, and thank you for bringing it to us. At this point, I'll ask for comments or questions from the open space committee members. Would anybody like to comment at this time?
Jerry Massad here.
Go, Jerry.
I want to commend you on your in-depth presentation. I think it's awesome. But I also would like to add one little thing that I don't think perhaps we'll post signs at public access points is suitable. I think it definitely needs to happen because part of the problem we're having is that there is no signage and that people are just doing whatever they want out there. So I'd like to make that as a recommendation. I think that's really all I have. I think you did a great job on this thing. Thanks.
Thank you, Jerry. I know you've been close to it and very much involved. So, signage.
I do have a comment. Sorry. Greg, do we have any idea of the timeline on this?
Well, part of that will depend upon where we go from here with the master plan. Based on comments and recommendations that we received tonight, we can either move forward with taking this to the Board of Supervisors, or we may have to go back and make some significant revisions and come back to OSAC in the future. So that's part of it. But I think that once it's approved by the Board of Supervisors, then it's a matter of working to implement the pieces of the plan. Some of it is going to require obtaining grant funding for some of the bigger projects, like the loop trail around Prison Hill and things like that. Some of the stuff that we can do, for example, on the 114-acre Coons parcel, we could do, I think, with existing quality of life funding. There's a lot of pieces that are in play right now, like, for example, completing the Fifth Street trailhead and completing the access around the dam. We've got we have a very active volunteers Muscle Power is very active and is very excited about moving forward with projects as soon as we can get the cultural clearances. So there's a lot of things that we can do, I think, fairly quickly, and there's some of the bigger projects will require some more time.
Well, thank you for that, and looking forward to seeing the improvements.
Amen. Okay, other comments from Open Space Committee members?
On the 114-acre parcel, I wasn't real clear, but
I took it that you're going to eliminate all OHV activity on that parcel?
Correct. We are spending a significant amount of money and resources to develop an OHV area on the south end of Prison Hill, and so we feel that trying to manage OHV in two areas is probably too much. In addition, it's a very small parcel. It's very proximate to a lot of homes. We've had a lot of people that have commented and given us feedback with regard to activities that happen up there, particularly at night. We have incidences of dumping, hypodermic needles, condoms, beer cans, and whiskey bottles, and all kinds of activity that happen up there, and that is not happening on behalf of recreationists. It's happening by people that are able to take advantage of driving into that area to do those activities. So we feel that just closing that to motorized access, except for access to the trailheads, that's our staff recommendation.
Okay, so that parcel is going to be managed in conjunction with have you already gotten an agreement from Public Works, and are they going to help put in some money?
Okay, Donnie, you broke up a little bit on that, but I gather that you're referring to working with Public Works on that parcel. Public Works has been providing us comments and feedback on that particular location, and but as far as funding for fixing the road, I think that's just for us to, you know, to try to negotiate with them to help us at least with access. They need to maintain the road to be able to access the water tank and their municipal facilities. Hopefully they can help us a little bit with improving it to recreational standards. There are other things that we may be able to do, grant funding or use some quality of life funding if it were approved by OSAC.
And one other question, the Golden Eagle parcel, there's no way really to reach that directly from the Mexican Ditch parcel. Do we have signs up saying you're leaving Mexican Ditch going onto private property, et cetera?
When you travel around Golden Eagle Lane, and you start, you're on the west or the east side of Prison Hill heading north again, you would encounter a gate with a private property sign on it. And the owners back there do not want motorized activity across their property. They've been amenable to allowing pedestrians and mountain bikes to cross that property. But realistically, we would like to find access, or ultimately, if we can build that loop trail around Prison Hill, we'll be able to navigate around all private property. And so I think the best access for non-motorized users would be on that loop trail, either from the north or from the south. Does that answer your question?
Do we have something now from the north, from Mexican Ditch? Do we have signs saying, you know, do not cross this, this is private property?
No, we don't have signs there right now. We do have plans to put a gate in on the there's a road that goes from the private road across Mexican Ditch, across the Mexican Dam open space to the Mexican Ditch, and we do have plans to gate that. But you're correct, we should put signs up that designate where the private property is.
Thank you.
Other comments from Open Space Committee members? Okay, hearing none, a couple of thoughts that come to my mind. It looks like a little bit of split rail fencing might help an awful lot on that Coons Lane parcel to minimize the access for kind of the driving access, if you will, looking at what you have there on Clearview and around the trailhead and a little bit of at the entrance to the water tank. I can empathize with folks up there. It's a little bit like Kings Canyon, where it's kind of the Wild West off the Coons Lane there. And there may be some things that would be feasible early on. I do think it would be worthwhile to have a little more formal coordination with Public Works to try to see, for example, if the detention basins are something that they would want to try to consider earlier in their process as opposed to later. Those are not hugely expensive the way they are there, and depending on the benefits, in terms of their priorities, that could be something. Obviously, Public Works is a partner, but they're not, they have their own funding issues. But hopefully, we would look at something like this and have Public Works, more formalized input to make sure that if they wanted to talk about access or drainage to reach those detention basins or grading or other things that conceivably might help with the reclamation of some of that area where it's been just bisected with roads and pathways might also be helpful as an element. I know there's been some discussion, but I'd like to see us continue on this pathway of developing and finalizing this master plan so we can begin to put some things in place that help implement this in pieces, even though it's going to take a while. Any other comments from Open Space? All right, hearing none. Did you folks have any comments, Leanne, from a recreational perspective?
Do any of the Park and Rec commissioners have any comments or questions regarding this item?
This is Stacey Wilkie. I would just like to say I really enjoyed the presentation. Since the COVID thing has come up, I've spent more time out there at Prison Hill, and it definitely needs more signage, especially for the OTVs, and it's really hard to tell where the property lines are up there. And that during this COVID, we know of like 10 groups from California that are coming up almost every weekend now to enjoy our facilities. So really enjoyed the presentation and the work by staff. Thank you.
So any other questions or comments from the commission? Thank you so much, Greg. We really appreciate that. It was informative. A lot of work went into it.
Yeah, thank you. And I just wanted to address Stacy's comment about the designation between the OHV area and non-OHV area. So that is definitely part of our plan going forward. In fact, we once we complete Section 106 cultural clearances for the south end of Prison Hill for the OHV area, we are going to begin implementing new trails, signage, fencing, and water management facilities. So there'll be a lot of activity going on down there, and that will definitely include making very, very clear designations between the two areas.
Thank you, Greg. That's going to be, I think, real helpful and address a lot of the concerns that have been brought to Open Space about the OHV area. I realize it's impossible to predict, but do you have any idea on the Section 106 process in terms of moving it forward so we can begin to do some of that fencing and signage?
I can speak to that. Lindsay Blair, Open Space Manager. So right now we're kind of looking at the hill as a whole and seeing where we need to complete Section 106 and where it's been completed and how that aligns with various projects. So right now we're in the process of getting the south end cleared so that we can move forward with all of the project needs out there. That's been a huge priority. But we've already started looking at the hill and identifying kind of the next stages of completing Section 106. it is a somewhat expensive process and a cumbersome process in terms of timing, so we're just looking at piecing that and accomplishing sections as we go as it relates to priorities. So the west side of Prison Hills definitely is the next priority area after we complete the south end.
Great, thank you. We always have more priorities than you have time, so. Okay, this is an action item for the Open Space Committee, and we would certainly recommend, or we would certainly invite any input from the Parks and Rec folks. But do we have a motion regarding the recommendation of the supervisors regarding the draft plan?
Do we need public comment?
We do. That is my fault. Jeremy, go ahead, and then we'll get public comment.
Go ahead. Why don't we do public comment and only fine?
This is Mihaela. This is Mihaela from the District Attorney's Office. Mr. Paul, if you are thinking about making the disclosure, now would be a good time for you to make that.
Yes, ma'am. So, just in the interest of transparency, to avoid any conflicts of interest, I'll abstain from voting on this agenda item. My firm, NC, is a for-profit consulting engineering planning and environmental company, and we are conducting the Section 106 compliance for the OHP.
Okay, thank you for that disclosure. Now, do we have any public comment? Anybody on the phone to comment on this particular agenda item?
There is no public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please proceed. There is none? Mm-hmm. None? Excuse me. Okay. All right. With that, do we have a motion regarding the potential possible action on the draft plan?
I'll make a motion. Recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of a draft Prison Hill Recreation Area Master Plan.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. Seconded by Jerry and his dog.
That wasn't my dog.
Hey, that was Marcy's dog.
All right. Does he have any further comment? All right, is there any further discussion from Open Space Advisory Committee on the motion? Any final public comment? Okay, we have a motion to approve the draft master plan. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And we'll vote Jeremy as an abstention. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce.
Okay. Is it the desire of the two groups to move forward and try to get through the rest of the agenda, or do you want to take a couple minute break?
That's what
we want. Let's go. Okay.
We're at the end.
The chairperson says go for parks. We'll do it. I won't say that. Item 3D, discussion only, review and discussion regarding Carson City, Geese City, USA, number 76, annual report for the calendar year 2019.
Annual report?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're just keeping
us on the number 8. We'll go to 3C, annual report for regarding activities of the Open Space Division to be submitted to the Board of Supervisors. Still to you, Lindsay.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, as noted in this report, it is a requirement of the municipal code that we bring a report of open space activities for the calendar year to the Board of Supervisors. So, we are bringing this report to both committees here today. And so, I think I speak for all of us when I say how excited we are to present our accomplishments for 2019. We are pretty limited staff, and I think this 22-page document illustrates just how much we can get done with such a small staff, and so I'm really thankful to have
such a good team and be part of such a good team that we can get all of this stuff done. So I won't go through every single accomplishment that we completed in 2019, but I think there are some exciting things to note here. We expanded our staff in 2019. We brought on two open space seasonal maintenance workers to help us with the maintenance of our nearly 7,000 acres. We brought back on for the second summer a natural resource management AmeriCorps intern who helped us with some projects I'll highlight later, as well as bringing on a new Silver Saddle Ranch caretaker, as well as an invasive plants coordinator. So lots of new staff that came on in 2019. You'll note that this report is split up into a few sections, acknowledgments, activities and events, capital improvement projects, land acquisitions, and land management. So I just wanted to highlight a few exciting things from each section. Under acknowledgments, where we talk about our grant funding, I think it is important and exciting to note that the Open Space Division either manages or is an identified partner on 15 different grants, totaling almost $3 million in funds that we're able to leverage on top of the quality of life funding that we receive and use to manage all these lands. So I think that's incredibly impressive and exciting, again, for such a small staff. We have lots of volunteers who help us throughout the year. We would not be able to get what we do done without the help of volunteers. You know, folks like Muscle Powered obviously help us a lot as it relates to trail maintenance and trash activities and things like that. But other organizations such as River Wranglers, Great Basin Institute, Dutch Bros, Bikesmith, Kiwanis, and the Tahoe Rim Trail Association have all been valued partners as well. And we've had the opportunity to work with several Boy Scout troops and Eagle Scouts on a variety of projects. So we're just really thankful for all these volunteers who dedicated their time and efforts to Open Space to help us get things done. And it should be noted that we have an estimated value of $75,000 in the volunteer effort and time, nearly 3,000 hours spent on our land. So very thankful, very impressive. Moving on to some activities and events. This year and in previous years, we've spent a lot of time expanding our interpretive program, and I think that's a really exciting thing to note. You know, working with the department's AmeriCorps Vista volunteers, we've been able to, you know, build a program basically from the ground up. You know, we started with holding events that had just a few people, and you know, before COVID happened, we were topping out at 50, 60, you know, up to like 80 people attending some of our full moon hikes. So the community has really kind of leaned, grabbed on to these programs, and I think they're really excited to be able to participate in them, and we're excited to offer them, and we're happy to bring people to open space areas when they might not have been able to visit them before, weren't aware of them. Other exciting things, this year we held some events on Prison Hill for the first time. One of them was a cleanup in conjunction with the Pinette Mountain Trails Association, as well as some volunteers from the NJROTC from the high school. And they helped us clean up quite a bit of trash at the south end of Prison Hill, but the most exciting thing they helped us with was removing an abandoned vehicle that was stuck in the non-motorized portion of Prison Hill. It had been there for several years at this point. Staff had exhausted almost every option to get that vehicle out of there, so without those volunteers, we would not have gotten that vehicle removed. We also had the opportunity to highlight the south end of Prison Hill at a in-person workshop that was held at that site. So this was in conjunction with the National Off-Highway Vehicles Conservation Council conference, which was held in Reno. So they held this mobile workshop, and they brought attendees from around the world to come and see our open space and talk about our project improvements and everything that we're doing down there. So that was very exciting. Other things that happened in open space, I think everyone is aware of the Homestead Holidays event that took place this year. That was a new one for open space, and it received a lot of attention and attendance, and I think highlighted Silver Saddle Ranch to a lot of folks who had never been there or even heard of it. So I think using events like this to expand people's interest and knowledge of open space is huge. So we were excited to help partner on that event. As Greg mentioned, we completed some improvements to the 5th Street trailhead. I think that's just such a visible project, and it's every time I drive by, I'm just so proud to see what we've accomplished there. You know, if you remember what it looked like before, it just looks so polished and awesome now. So that was a really exciting project. I think we were glad to finish this year. Other items, I think it's exciting to note that we did complete one acquisition in 2019. So the Open Space Division acquired an additional 20 acres along US Highway 50 west. So this property was previously owned by Michael Fagan, who's been kind of a friend of Open Space and, you know, has partnered with us on conservation easements and other property acquisitions. We were very excited to purchase and preserve that section of property to really, you know, prevent that view shed coming into Carson City from potentially being developed. I mentioned that our natural resource intern did some exciting projects this year. So we have an issue with the noxious weed Eurasian water milfoil in Carson City. This is an aquatic noxious weed that is highly invasive and incredibly problematic in terms of there's not a whole lot of solutions to get rid of it. So we've spent a lot of time evaluating different options and trying to figure out how to manage that issue. Tahoe has a huge issue with milfoil as well, and they've spent millions of dollars at this point trying to manage it. So the main problem with this plant is in the Mexican ditch, and it tends to clog up irrigation structures. It outcompetes, you know, native aquatic vegetation, takes up space that, you know, wildlife would be using, all those kinds of things. So working with our natural resource management intern, she spent the summer surveying all of our waterways and noting where we had infestations. But I think the most exciting thing that she accomplished was putting together a comprehensive management plan for this plant that really identified all the different treatment strategies and how we can best move forward. And she also completed an experiment related to that project, which you can see in this report, where she evaluated a few different methods using black plastic or clear plastic that essentially cook the plant or prevent it from receiving sunlight. So we're excited to start implementing all the stuff that she put in that management plan, and we're very proud of her and her accomplishments. Other things that happened this year, there was a huge fire in Carson River Canyon open space in 2018. And so in response to that, we got some grant funding from the Nevada Dream Tax Charitable Fund grant to do a large-scale restoration in Carson River Canyon. So that whole area was aerially seeded using a helicopter. And we did some small experiments in there with seeding as well, just to really try to prevent you know, invasives from taking hold. It was a 200-acre fire, so it was a pretty large area that was burned. So we were excited to receive that funding and complete that revegetation. East Silver Saddle Ranch has been ongoing, but I think if anyone has been out there lately, you can see just how much that site has changed through time. You know, we completed a lot of improvements to that site starting in 2017, 2018, and then just continued that into 2019. And at this point, we have seen a total turnaround in terms of the trash that's there, the nefarious activities. Just, it's a completely different site. So we're really proud of everything that's going on at East Silver Saddle as well. Of course, we had our sheep project we run every year. 2019 was the second year we held our trail graze hike to highlight the project. And that was one where we had nearly 70 people attend, and you know, everyone loves the sheep, so they were very interested to learn more about that project. So we'll continue that into future years. So there's other things noted in this plan, obviously. I think another thing to really highlight, as Greg just went through, was just everything that we've done down at the south end of Prison Hill. Obviously, that's been a huge focus for us and a big priority, so a lot of our efforting has gone in there, but I think there's a lot of really visible changes, and there's just so much positivity coming out of this project, so we're really excited and proud about that as well. So I'm sure there's other things in here that I didn't touch on, but if anyone has any specific questions or comments they'd like to make related to our annual report, I would take them.
Thank you, Lindsay. Any comments or questions from committee members? All right, hearing none.
Great,
Lindsay. Yes. Yep.
I just wanted to thank Lindsay and all of the people that work on this report. They really want that report to get wider audience. Our Board of Supervisors. It's such a good report, and it says so much about what the open space funding is doing for the city. It's great to hear and great to read. And thank you so much for all your efforts.
Thank you, Margie. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Margie. Any other comments from the committee? Sure.
I noticed on page 2 of your report, and I looked down at phase 3 of your grants, is that indicating that the Nevada Off-Highway Vehicle Commission has already granted $100,000 for phase 3? And is that a final date of expenditure? So is it like it has to be spent by 12/31/2022? I just happen to see the date 2022, and I'm like, they've already obligated that and the $150,000 for recreational trails for
it? So they have been officially awarded those fundings. As far as the recreational trails program side of things is concerned, they have seen some delays with COVID, so they haven't officially released those funds, but they have been awarded. And so I suppose with COVID, there could be some potential extensions to that deadline, since we haven't had the opportunity to move forward with any spending yet. But as of right now, that's the deadline.
That's what I'm after, is looking if we have any deadlines or anything in any of the other work we've done to please highlight for the Board of Supervisors for priorities if there's any grant that would expire. We want to make sure we move those projects. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Lindsay, and good comment. All right. It just goes to show how much the staff has done and how effective they've been with such a small staff. We're really proud of what you guys have done and what Carson City offers to people with regard to open space, trails, and as well as the parks and recreation side of things. So, are there any other comments from Parks and Rec Commission members on this particular agenda item before we ask for a public comment? Is that a long enough silence? All right. Are there any public comments on this item?
There is no public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. That being said, do we have a motion to approve this annual report for presentation and submittal to the Board of Supervisors?
I move to approve the 2019.
I'd like to say in conjunction that I think it's really silly that we have this up on a joint committee agenda. I mean, this is something that only has to do with open space. So why is the Park and Rec people subject to this dissertation? I don't get that. And in reverse, I'd like to say that I don't want to listen to the recommendations conference for last year, unless it has to do with open space. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Moving forward, all in favor of the motion on the floor to approve this for presentation to the board, say aye.
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 Okay, motion passes. And, you know, Jerry's point, with regard to subject matter for the Open Space Committee or the joint meetings or Parks and Rec is certainly something that we can keep in mind. This is important timing-wise because we're running out of 2020 and this is a 2019 report, and with COVID and that sort of thing, I think it's one of those where, unfortunately, Parks Commission got to hear it.
Enjoyed it.
Okay, let's go to number item 3B, review and discussion regarding the Carson City B-City USA number 76 annual report for calendar year 2019. Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lindsay Boyer, Open Space Manager. So I think this is another just really exciting thing that we're proud to share. For those who might not be aware or haven't heard, Carson City is a B-City USA. We were designated as such on October 18th, 2018. And we were the 76th B-City USA in the nation and the first in Nevada. And for those who don't know what B-City USA is, B-City USA is an initiative of the Xerces Society, which is all about invertebrate conservation, specifically focusing on pollinators. And as a society, they noticed, within the last decade or so, just the declines that are happening with pollinator populations, specifically honeybees, but this applies to all pollinators, butterflies, bats, bees, the whole nine. So, they realized that there's obviously something going on with pollinator populations, and they've identified a few different reasons why pollinators might be imperiled. Things like habitat loss, monoculture crops that we grow, for food, reducing diversity that way, misuse or overuse of pesticides. So lots of different things are contributing to those declines. But as we know, pollinators are critical to our own survival. I think it's 2/3 of all the food that we eat comes from a pollinator services. So without pollinators, we would really have a pretty bland diet. So with this program, they really started to encourage cities as well as college campuses to become B-City affiliates, and what that means is you're essentially committed to the cause of pollinator conservation, and you're sort of agreeing to do some things within your city to help promote pollinators, and there's so many different avenues that you can take with promoting them. Education is definitely one huge thing that they promote. They want to educate the public, they want to educate staff, they want to educate everyone on just how to best manage for pollinator habitat and also not be impactful, accidentally through just not knowing. So really, that's the first place that we start, is just educating on best management practices. We've done that through holding quite a few meetings. We hold at least 4 every year that we invite the public to. And we teach different classes such as planting for pollinators or intro beekeeping and things like that. So really trying to start with the public on what they can do in their own homes. Some other things that I think are really exciting to note, the city really jumped on us being a Bee City USA. I think Carson City is very proud of this, and everyone has really done their part in a different way to promote. So I think one way that happened was through the 2019 Chamber Leadership Group. Their project for the year was to put together a bee habitat, and specifically a bee hotel. So if everyone has not been to the Foothill Garden area where this bee hotel is put in, it's absolutely beautiful. It contains all kinds of interpretive information. There's even some mason bee cells, so you have the opportunity to see these bees and their little homes that they make, and the goal is to increase pollination to the greenhouse project that's adjacent there, where they grow food and flowers. So I think that's just been wildly successful. There's just been so many residents and public members who have been excited about that. In conjunction, the Chamber Leadership Group and the hospital and everyone who is up there, the greenhouse project as well,
to put in a pollinator garden. So that's another beautiful thing to take a look at. There's some photos in here of what that looks like. It was a totally, you know, grassroots-led effort. We got seeds donated, and we grew them up, and we planted them. So that was super exciting. And I think it just shows how much Carson City really jumped onto to being a Bee City USA. Another thing that I'm really proud to highlight is our pollinator-friendly plant list. So another recommendation from Xerces is to put together a list of plants for your region that you can share with the public and others. So people are, you know, planting the right plants and also promoting pollinators while they're doing it. So I put together a huge list of all the plants. It's nearly 160 plants that are you know, either local or adapted to this area, that are all good for pollinators. And what we did is we basically made it a condition of approval to developers that their plant palette has to have at least 50% plants from this pollinator species list, which is huge. When I told that to the Xerces Society, they told me that no other city in the United States was doing that. And so I think we really have the opportunity to change the plant palette of Carson City and, you know, create all these little restaurants, you know, for the bees as they move around town. So that's super exciting. A few other things, you know, obviously you can see here we held quite a few events to promote pollinator conservation, everything from educational events to, you know, booth, you know, tabling booth events and things like that. Working with children as well. So we've been kind of all over the place trying to get our message out. And then lastly, one requirement of the program is that we come up with an integrated pest management strategy for the whole city. So that's something that will be forthcoming in the next year. It really just outlines our goals and procedures as it relates to using integrated pest management as much as possible in our practices, you know, not only in parks and open space, but providing those recommendations to the public as well. So with that, I'll take any bee questions.
Thank you. And we are in National Pollinator Week, I see. So comments or questions from committee members?
May I make a comment? This is Margie.
Sure, Margie.
Lindsay, that was beautiful.
Thank you so much, Marty. I caught the pun there, and I liked it.
Yeah, your enthusiasm shines through on this one. This is great. Emma,
did your plant list online?
Yeah, so we made a webpage where people can go and access resources as it relates to Bee City. So it's carson.org/BeeCityUSA, and the plant list is noted there, along with all kinds of other stuff. And I should note, I am remiss in not mentioning that the Great Basin Beekeepers in Nevada were huge in getting this pushed through, and you would not have become a Bee City USA if it wasn't for their efforts. So we appreciate them as well.
Great. Any other comments or questions for staff?
I just kind of love losing out there across from Sonoma Park with a bee company, actually. Family has bees in their front yard, they raise them and they sell their honey. It's interesting watching when they're out in the little bee keeping out this keeping those things.
It's a very interesting hobby, lifestyle, whatever you want to call it, but I love that there's such a presence of that in Carson City.
Yeah. Okay, are there any public comments on this item?
There is no public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, moving along. Item 3E. This would be a Parks and Rec item, so I'll turn it over to Leanne.
Thank you, Bruce. Item 3E, discussion only regarding the possible scheduling of a July Parks and Recreation Commission meeting to discuss drafting schedule and outstanding items due to cancellation of the April meeting. Jennifer, do you want to go with that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. Due to COVID, we canceled the April Parks and Recreation Commission meeting. The meeting prior, which was February, the Parks and Recreation Commission wanted to have a special item highlighting the fee schedule. I didn't want to forget about that. I thought I would check in with all of you to see if you wanted to schedule a July meeting, specifically to highlight that item and go through that.
or if you prefer to, you know, table that and continue on with the August meeting for that.
How does our agenda for August look? Is it heavy? And how much of an increased workload would this present to staff if we had a special meeting?
We had prepared the majority of the work already. Dan Arp has been working really hard on this. We do need to revise the policy based on the comments at the last meeting. And then you do have in your packet future agenda items for open space and then future agenda items for parks and rec on the back. So that takes you through what would be planned for August. If we had a July meeting, it could be the disc golf course agreement and then the policy, perhaps only. In August, we just have the park program of the month, which would be the park ranger program. And then we'd like to start a discussion on dog use in parks and open space. We'll be having that discussion as well because we're having a lot of issues with off-leash dogs and talk to begin a discussion on, the leash laws in Person City and where do we need to start working on that to make sure we have, safe and enjoyable facilities that we can provide. So we wanted to start that discussion in the fall if that pleases the board.
Lori, what do you think?
Yes. Okay. So I kind of look at the dog use for the leashes. I think that one is actually ripe for the joint meeting with open space. I see that one as somewhere in which continuity or potentials on, what do we see? So I'd like to see myself personally, the dog use move into kind of what Jerry was saying. That issue crosses both committees, and I'd like to see us have not divergent answers, but if we come together as a group, that might it's already going to be controversial. So,
what do you think? Should we have a July?
So then, in that case, we would not need a July because we can just do it in August if we move the dog use down to the joint meeting. Then I think the August 18th would be perfect for disc golf and the fees.
Okay. How did the other commission members feel about this?
Well,
Bruce Kermit, I think Lori had some great ideas there.
Yeah, I was going to agree with her too. I think that would work out perfectly, and there'd be no need for a July meeting in that case.
Yeah, we're happy to do that.
All right, are there any public comments on this agenda item?
There is no public comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much.
Okay, next item 4A, Director's Report. Jennifer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. Before I start, I just wanted to thank Lindsay and Greg. The caliber of the reports that they do are amazing. We typically would hire consultants for this level of activity for tens of thousands of dollars. So not only do we save money because we have amazing resources on our team, but we are a small and mighty team and they're just doing amazing, and I just wanted to thank them for all their hard work. So it's just so impressive. The annual report and the Prison Hill report is just tremendous. So I just wanted to thank them for all their hard work. So the Carson City Lands Bill was introduced by Congressman Amaday as H.R. 6228. It's been referred to a few committees, so it's in review right now. It was on hold definitely because of COVID and is likely to be introduced to the Senate by Senator Rosen in the coming weeks once the land and water conservation funds are finalized. It's sort of in the queue right after that is heard. If you want to get updates on that, go to congress.gov and you can sign up for any updates on the progress of the federal lands bill. But I just wanted to thank Congressman Amaday and Senator Rosen. They've been really tremendous, and their staff's been staying in touch with us on a regular basis, and we really appreciate that. So the budget is, the hot topic other than COVID. And COVID-19 has really had a tremendous impact, not only nationally but locally on our budgets. During the shutdown, the department had 174 part-time staff on payroll. Of that, 11 staff remained working. Everyone else was suspended. Those 11 staff were reassigned to the Emergency Operations Center, the Health Department, Senior Services, and the landfill.
So we're really thankful we could provide some opportunities for that part-time staff, but our department really took a pretty devastating hit during the shutdown time. Now that we're partially reopened, we do have some staff returning to work on a very limited basis for limited operations, but significantly less than our normal operations would be. Currently, there's a citywide hiring freeze for staff, and the department has the following vacancies I just wanted to point out. One is a full-time park maintenance worker. Also, Lindsay's former position, the senior natural resource specialist, is frozen. And then our part-time invasive plant coordinator is on hold as well. So, you know, other staff are having much bigger workloads and wearing other hats than they normally would. So I just wanted to thank the staff for all that they're doing for this. The city also eliminated all supplemental requests for this upcoming year. So a supplemental request is a request from departments for additional funding for operating budgets. You'll remember, at least in the open space meeting, we didn't quite get to it in the Parks Commission meeting because we were canceled. We had visions of adding a third park ranger and some other growth within the department, and unfortunately those things aren't just going to happen quite right now, but maybe again in the future. We haven't forgot about them, and we'll make sure that we kind of plug ahead when the time is right. But capital progress projects were also deferred, and some capital projects that were already in progress were still authorized by the Board of Supervisors, so we really appreciate their support with that. And that includes for the department reconstruction of the parking lot at Pete Livermore Sports Complex, which is so sorely needed with such a significant safety concern. That's already started, and will be that park will be closed the month of July for that project. And then the equipment storage building at the corporate yard, which was really needed. We used to have a storage facility that was taken down when the animal shelter was constructed. And we have all this wonderful new equipment, and we want to be able to protect it from the elements. So that is moving forward, and that benefits parks and open space equipment. So the majority of our revenue, it's difficult to track because it's 2 months in arrears. So we won't know where the sales tax dollars, which is the primary source, not the only source of funding for open space. We do leverage a lot of funding with grants and donations, but we won't know where we are for a bit down the road. We're going to continue to work with the finance department in monitoring those budgets and seeing where we're at. But it's likely those vacancies will probably need to be on hold for another 3 to 6 months just while we see those revenues come in, just to make sure we have enough money to keep the existing staff on payroll. And, you know, keeping the staff as is my number one priority. So we've already met the staff and have a lot of ideas to, you know, keep our expenses down and have opportunities to share across divisions to make sure we're supporting each other. And we'll keep this as a standing item for both boards as the budget as we move forward. And any updates that I have, you know, in between, I'll make sure that I let all of you know where we're at budget-wise. But the Board of Supervisors has that as a standing item on all of their meetings as well. So they're definitely doing everything they can to keep the public and all of our advisory boards updated as we move forward. COVID-19, to continue that fun conversation, the city is receiving over $10 million in funding from the CARES Act to assist with COVID-related expenses. And, you know, our department is not exempt from that funding, and there are opportunities where we've had to implement new sanitizing practices for this to be compliant with the CDC guidelines, putting in measures like sneeze guards at the pool and the MAC and our administration facility, and requiring additional cleaning services in between facility rentals and other expenses like personal protective equipment and other measures that we've had that we'll be able to utilize that funding for the benefit of the department and the public. So we're really appreciative of that opportunity and have that availability to us as well. The majority of our park facilities have reopened or are in the process of reopening. The pool is now open for lap swim, and the therapy pool is open and available for use. The MAC opened for limited use as well. Advanced registration is required for both of those facilities per the governor's guidelines. You can go to carson.org and you can reserve online, or if you have difficulty with that, just call in a facility and the staff will help make a reservation for you. Camp Carson will start on June 29th. it will have a very limited operation. We're going to have two locations, one at the Carson City Community Center and the gym, and then one at the Mark Texera Pavilion, both at Mills Park. But we'll only have two groups of 46 kids each to be compliant with the guidelines for COVID. Normally we have, you know, 300 to 400 participants in that program, so it's significantly reduced than what we normally have. But we're still really happy that we're able to provide something for the public. The disc golf course, Eagle Valley golf course, the archery range, and all the shooting ranges are back open, which is wonderful. There are some guidelines and some restrictions from normal operation. Like at the shooting facility, we do have every other shooting station open on the long range just to make sure people are social distancing. But people have been so excited and supportive and happy to have recreation opportunities back. Youth sports can operate for practices only. Carson Little League is starting today, actually at Governor's Field, so we're really happy about that. Tournaments, games, and spectator events are still prohibited at this time. So we are working with all of our user groups to try to make sure that you know, we're ready to go when we get the okay to be able to do so. Outdoor sport courts and skate parks are open. Our playgrounds still remain closed, and those will likely be the last thing that we open. Just because they're high-touch areas, high contact, easy for transmission, and it's just difficult to have spacing, you know, with toddlers and young kids to keep people safe. So, and that's with the consistent with the governor and the president's guidance. The rifle and pistol range, I'm proud to say the construction is complete and we're back open. Even with social distancing measures, as I said, we've had up to 250 people for drop-in use at that facility. And that's not even including the attendance for group reservations. So we're so proud to have that open. And when all this is over, we'll definitely plan a big celebration so everybody can get out and enjoy that facility. The Board of Supervisors did approve the fee schedule for that facility, and fees will be implemented starting July 1st. And then staff continues to seek additional funds for further improvements. We did do improvements to the covered lines and to the roof structures and had a contractor out to work on that to make sure that they were safe. And then we also submitted a grant to the Department of Wildlife for some additional improvements at the range. So we look forward to hearing from them on that. I wanted to thank Danner for his efforts. He worked with Carson Tahoe Hospital, and they're giving us $17,000 to create an outdoor recreation program. So that will provide equipment, instruction, training for staff, and it'll be very low cost, so people that might not be able to afford these opportunities will be able to get outside and recreate. And we'll probably start some of those programs hopefully this summer or fall. We can operate with small numbers and keep within the guidelines that we have right now. So we'll see that program grow over time. And then I just wanted to acknowledge Dave and Juana Whitefield for all their efforts to raise money. They've led this grassroots effort for pickleball, and they've raised over $12,000 to make safety improvements at the courts at Mills Park to provide a safer and better facility for pickleball at Mills. And we know that that's just a temporary measure. We want to have nice new permanent courts down the road, but they're really providing, you know, an effort for the public that, you know, we're not going to be able to provide right now, especially with our budget constraints. So I appreciate citizens getting out there and making things happen and supporting our efforts. So sorry, that was kind of long. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any comments for Jennifer or questions from either committee? Lori.
So can we go back a little bit on the playground discussion? So is it two separate issues? One, like you said, is potentially that's a high-touch area and not potentially cleaning in between or whatever. But do we have some playgrounds in some of the neighborhood parks that really don't have a bunch of children playing on that, that they are less than 10? And, So kind of help me on the playground issue a little bit, because if they could be practicing sports and the contacts are there. So I'm just trying to understand the playground a little bit.
I completely understand what you're saying, and it's basically based on the president and the governor's guidance. So the playgrounds were one of the first things to be closed and are likely one of the last things to be reopened because of the high-touch areas. It's definitely not a decision that we're making. It's just in compliance with that guidance. And I hear what you're saying, and there's definitely playgrounds that are
not as popular or well attended as some of our destination ones, like the one at Roswell Park. People drive all over town to want to go to that. It's not up to us. It's specifically listed in the guidance that they remain closed right now. So we're just complying with the governor.
CDC or the governor? Because if you can send that to me, I saw it in the CDC that it was recommended, but I don't think I saw it later.
Yeah, they haven't authorized that as being reopened, and they've been, I think it was like directive one or two where they ended up being closed. So as soon as we get the green light to reopen them, we definitely will. And we're hearing from a lot of parents that really want to have that available.
Especially since the skate park is open.
I know. A lot of the guidance, I fully appreciate the inconsistencies, but we're just following the rules we've been given.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments for Lindsay? I'm sorry, for Jennifer, excuse me. All right, is there any public comment?
There is no public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll go to item five, member announcements and request for information. Anne, you want to go ahead?
Sure. Thank you so much, Bruce. Jennifer, as I told you before, the regulars at Sonoma Golf Park are very appreciative of the efforts that this department staff has put into maintaining that park. And some of them have said that they've driven to other parks and seen the same level of effort, and they think it's wonderful considering everything that has been going on. So they said to give you a big thank you. And then they had a couple of questions. As one of them is, they really like fertilizer on that's being used on the parks, and they want to know if they can buy that or if it's just for institutional use only. And then they also want to know if we could push back the morning watering at Sonoma to maybe 6 o'clock, so when they start coming about 7, the lawn has started to dry. I said I would ask, and we can find out.
I'm happy to follow up with you on that. Okay. And just a comment about park maintenance. We have no inmate help right now, so that's typically equivalent to 20 full-time staff that we're down in park maintenance. And what they're able to accomplish with such a small staff, and we have several staff that actually have injuries and are on light duty for various reasons. So we're really down to a very skeleton crew, and they're still just accomplishing so much. So I will pass on that thanks to them, because they definitely deserve it.
Thank you.
Any other Parks and Rec comments, member announcements? All right, hearing none, how about Open Space Committee? Any member announcements? I've got a couple. Horse Creek Ranch has changed hands recently, June 1st. It has a new owner. Michael Fagan's been working closely, I think, with everyone on the transition. Made it very clear the restrictions of conservation easement and all the other agreements that have been part of that. So we're optimistic that we're going to see somebody who's going to have some limited activity up there, but definitely plans to have some activity. We did make an application for water rights temporarily with the approval and cooperation of Mr. Gerard for Buzzy's Ranch for this irrigation season. There are water rights currently there on a temporary basis from last year that are expiring in early July. There is some water already on the property on a permanent basis, but not sufficient to irrigate everything. So we're hopeful that we'll get the approval of a temporary permit so that we can continue the irrigation through our ranch manager on that the rest of the summer. The last thing I would say, the senior center has really benefited from the Parks and Rec folks who have helped out over there, and I'd just like to say thank you on behalf of the senior center. Okay, item number, I'm sorry.
This is Commissioner Whitefield. I was slow on my unmute button. I just had a quick comment for Jennifer and her staff. kind of mutual admiration society. I wanted to thank Jennifer and the staff for all the work they've done helping us out with our pickleball project. It's we've had to change course a couple of times due to some unexpected things that we found as we uncovered more facts about the courts at Mills Park, and they've really bent over backwards to help us and adjust and move forward with the project, and just really appreciate their help. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, future agenda items we touched on earlier. Let's talk Parks and Rec first, and then we'll go to open space.
Do any of the Parks and Rec commissioners have any agenda items they'd like to see on future agendas other than what we've already discussed this evening? Roy? Anybody? Jennifer? You pretty much have a list of what the commission's interested in and that they'd like discussed, and so you're good?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne. Open Space Committee, we have future agenda items proposed for August 17th, October 19th, and the joint meeting we talked about with Parks and Rec in December. Any other committee input for agenda items for any of our upcoming meetings? Yes, Jerry.
Yeah. Is there a response? Or is
I'm sorry.
No?
I didn't hear your question.
The question is this. Well, it's not really a question. It's just paper. I would like to institute a policy that limits our agenda should be limited to just those items that impact both commissions. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Any input to Jerry's item for any discussion at this point? From a staff perspective, does that create any issues or concerns? There may be some interpretive ones, but basically, is that anything we should be aware of in your first reaction to that suggestion?
No, I think the items that we bring forward, we try to do ones that are really department-wide. I know you think Prison Hill is only an open space issue, but there's an off-highway vehicle area. We have a lot of recreation enthusiasts on the Parks and Rec Commission that I think can provide some good insight and support with that. They're not all designated open space areas, so it's sort of holistic, which is why we've kind of tried to bring that to the joint meeting. And then, you know, the annual report, it's really because of COVID and having cancellations with meeting that we needed to bring out, be able to bring that forward so we can get it to the Board of Supervisors. So that's sort of kind of where we were going. We don't always have that choice, and sometimes timing doesn't always work in that factor. But I appreciate, you know, Member Massad's comments on that, and we are definitely sensitive to that.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from committee members?
This is Margie.
Yes, Margie.
And Bruce, I have a question for you. I need you to think back in your mind many, many years, like maybe back to Juan Guzman. There was some work being done to slowly transfer Stenheimer wetlands to open space. And that kept getting put off because there were other things more important on the work plan for each current year. Do you remember anything about that?
What I remember is not the Stenheimer wetlands, but the wetlands that were done as part of the Northbridge project.
Goldstone wetlands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's something we could look into. But the Stenheimer ones, I don't, you know, there is an area where we do have behind Harley Davidson, or Harley Davidson used to be there. We do have wetlands in there that we have received, but I don't know if there's anything further south that was pending.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
think it was a long time ago, and I just don't want it to get completely lost. If they could research back and write us something in our next meeting. Since you got me a little bit of something on it, but I thought there might be more.
Okay, as I recall, there was some sort of title issue on a part of that area in the Northridge. But we can ask staff to take a look. They've got plenty of time.
Yeah, and we can look too if there's part of a condition of approval for any developments or something that might have fallen through with the development agreement or things like that. So we can look into that with community development as well.
And
my recollection was that it was early on in my tenure on the committee. And if you would look at the work plans for maybe the first couple of years, you would see a status on it. And I think I started around 2011.
And it probably wouldn't hurt to give Juan a call and see what he can recall as well. Okay, any other comments from committee members? Okay, we're down to our final public comment. Are there any public comments at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair, looks like we have one public comment.
Okay. Last call.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. There is no other comment.
All right. Thank you for the clarification. No problem. With that, we are ready for a motion to adjourn.
So moved. I'll
second it. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.